Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by Eddie Bauer. This winter, don't let the cold hold you back from getting outdoors. Eddie Bauer's new Evertherm down jacket is unlike any other. No quilting, no cold spots. This is down. Available exclusively at Eddie Bauer stores or EddieBauer.com/Evertherm. Eddie Bauer, live your adventure. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/NSS. And by Eero. Never think about Wi-Fi again with Eero's hyper-fast, super simple Wi-Fi system. And now the second generation Eero is tri-band and twice as fast. For free overnight shipping to the U.S. or Canada, visit Eero.com, select overnight shipping at checkout, and enter the code NSS.
Driving the Leaf, the first crowd-developed computer and gifts for techie kids, live from the Twit Eastside Studios in beautiful Petaluma, California. It's the new Screensavers.
Screensavers on the new Screensavers. Patrick
Norton,
host.
Good to see you. Good to Leo see Laporte. You, my buddy.
Patrick Norton, everybody, from TechThing, TechThing.com.
Yes, please.
And, yes, of course, this week in computer hardware.
Mm-hmm.
And this is it. I knew. I'm so thrilled to see you. This, by the way, in honor of you, I wore a 20-year-old
bowling shirt.
But do you remember this BC Ethic bowling shirt from the old Screensavers?
It's amazing.
Look at that.
I actually finally got rid of, I think, the last of my BC Ethics shirts.
It fits.
Yeah, well, they never change.
You know why it fits? It stretches. It'll fit for it. I could get to be 800 pounds.
Fitting is relative. It still covers you. That doesn't necessarily mean it fits. No, it's a thin line.
I think I look good in it. I feel like, you know, remember when we first started the new Screensavers? Actually, it might have been before your time.
I had hair.
Well, I remember that. You didn't have that much more hair.
I had a fair amount. When we started, yeah.
We had a fight over this. He certainly didn't have this thing.
No.
How long did it take you to... This is for your Movember?
I stopped shaving, and then somebody's like, oh, that's Movember, and this is about 4 or 5 weeks.
I'm so jealous.
No, actually, you're not, because you shave every 3 days, whether you need to or not.
You don't have to shave.
When did you shave? Like last
I shave
week?
Every morning. No, I have to shave twice a day.
What happens if you let it grow out? Do you have like that straggly 17-year-old mustache?
Nothing. I don't know. You know what? I can never get too far because it just gets itchy and I go, I give up. So I never get too far. But I wouldn't mind. If I had a beard that looked as good as that.
You may, but you've never found out.
I don't know. I don't know.
You're just going to have to do something for the scratch.
Anyway, nice to see you. Things are going well at TechThing?
Things are going well at TechThing.
Nice.
Yeah, it's exciting.
And of course, we love having you every week on This Week in Computer Hardware. We've got a big show. In fact, we've kind of tailored it around Patrick's skills. Your skill sets. We're going to talk about how you develop the perfect laptop. What if you went to 1,000 users and asked them?
One of two things would happen. One is that you get a hot mess that no one can actually use. The other is that you get something awesome that everybody enjoys.
It could be one or the other. We've got the Eve V for victory. The first first that we know.
Careful,
of
you don't insult Great Britain.
Oh, yeah, do it like that. This is Great Britain. This is peace.
Once again.
Victory, peace. And in France, I've just insulted everybody.
This is insulting everybody in France. It's a rugby thing.
I know. You think I've been working with you for a few years. I know.
You know all my tricks.
I know all the gestures. Well, maybe I don't.
There's one we've never actually made on air.
We can do that now. We can. There's no FCC. We can do anything we want.
Once. Yeah. And then the audience goes away.
Yeah.
We're kidding.
So we'll see. Did they create the perfect laptop? There it is. It's all hidden under the bag, We
I
will
like
give
the bag
you our
sitting
review.
On top of it.
We're going to talk wireless earbuds. Patrick's a headphone expert, a music expert. We actually have a number of music questions for you. I know you're into cars.
Yes.
I drive a Tesla, which I really like, but a number of people say it's overpriced. Yes, it is. And I don't do the Model 3, which is the least expensive one. Mm-hmm. I have a Model X. But there are less expensive.
Did you get ludicrous mode?
I got insane mode.
Okay.
And I'm glad I didn't get ludicrous mode, because even insane mode, I brown out. And I feel like if you're accelerating at that kind of speed and you go unconscious, that could be dangerous.
So you're basically saying you have to do the G-growler and tighten everything up before you stomp on the accelerator.
You can do that, although I think we have footage of you attempting to do that in the Blue Angels plane unsuccessfully.
Actually, that was the last... You know what that was? That was coming in the last turn before landing.
He passed out.
We're coming in at 200 knots. We make the first turn.
Yeah.
And they burn off about 50 or 70 knots.
Yeah.
And as we're going to the second turn, I am so fixated. There's a big supply plane. It's doing touch and goes.
Oh, jeez.
Like, we're like literally like 300 yards from a plane that is taking off right about where we're about to land. And I'm scope locked on the plane.
Yeah.
And I didn't hear... The guy, the flyer, basically, that's not what they
Weren't
say.
Weren't you wearing a flight suit?
No, you don't wear G-suits. Blue Angels don't wear G-suits.
I know they don't, but don't you?
No.
You thought, I'll be like them?
No.
They don't let you wear a G-suit?
Look, I got through 7.4 Gs without blacking out.
This is why I never did
this.
That
last turn, I was looking at the plane, and I didn't hear him, and he jacked it around 180 degrees, and
it's
my
a
head
great
went...
The nice thing is they shoot video of you the whole time, so we showed it, of course, on the screen.
Over and over again. It's on YouTube somewhere.
Patrick going out.
If you ever get a chance to fly with Blue Angels... Take it.
I've had three chances, turned them down every time, and I have no regrets.
They will take you on a super chill ride if you want.
No, they won't.
No, they're...
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we take you back. You did have hair.
Yeah.
We take you back
That's
to probably...
That's a bad haircut even by my standards.
This is the newest
the next
set.
Tape.
This is the new set.
I am so happy. What did you do?
They call it the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I am not going to argue.
Or three-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
I got to fly an F-18 with the Blue Angels. It's the U.S. Navy's Flight Demonstration Squadron. They do hundreds of shows every year for air shows all around the country. Is there tech? Is there technology
Did you really do
this?
7.5
Gs? I don't care. I double-checked.
Cheers. Wow. Your pilot today is going to be...
See, he's not wearing a flight suit because he's like a Blue Angel.
Yeah.
Patrick... You
that's
don't get
me,
to
that's me getting the learning about the bonus ride. Yeah, we do.
Yeah. And what do they shout? Clench?
It's like, ready, break.
Okay.
Oh, it was great.
I mean, that looks like just the worst nightmare of my life. Look, there's Patrick.
That's in the land.
He's out.
Right before we touch down.
Oh, he's breathing. He's breathing.
Yeah, because I realized it's too late.
And
boom.
He's out. But you didn't throw up, to your credit.
Well, yeah, it's because you need breakfast that morning.
Yeah, they tell you don't, whatever you do. Good for you. You are a man. I love that.
I think it was fun for him because he's like, what do you want to do? Like, you know, do the
brown
rolls,
do
the end. And he did everything he could do within the concert. Like, he's like, we can't go Mach 1, but we can go just under it.
You pulled 7 plus Gs.
7
amazing.
Point something Gs, yeah.
Holy cow, I'm impressed.
I did not enjoy
and
that.
And you didn't pass out.
That part I got through. The landing at like 3 Gs, I was like not paying attention.
So. When I push the pedal to the floor on my Tesla, I go, and that's not good. So I don't do that anymore. We weren't able, the Nissan Leaf, we're going to show you the new 2018 Nissan Leaf. It's an electric car, as all electric cars do. They have a lot of torque right from the moment.
Yes.
And I think it's got a lot of pickup.
The torque curve is flat, which means you get all the, as soon
full
as you...
Full torque at zero.
It's great. I've talked to drag racers who are like, and then they stand on it, and they're like, whoa!
Yeah, no, it's great. So Sam Abulmassamid, who is our you know, visiting car jockey, was able to get Nissan to come down here with their new 2018 Leaf. We'll take a drive in that. We've got some calls for help, a holiday gift guide, the best tech for kids with Megan Maroney. And we're going to show you how to install Google Play. You're going to do something Amazon doesn't want you to do. Put Google Play on an Amazon tablet.
Does Amazon want you to do anything that doesn't involve spending money in Amazon?
Not if it has the goo word in it. No. Big news stories. Okay, I feel like this was a watershed week in a number of ways. But you tell me what you think. So you remember that Google created, of course it was Deep Blue that IBM created, that beat the world champion in chess, Garry Kasparov. And it was not a dominant victory, but it beat him, and that's enough. That was more than 10 years ago. I think it was 2004. Fast forward to last year, a much more challenging game than chess, Go.
This one made me nervous.
And Google created something called their DeepMind AI, and AlphaGo beat the world champion at Go.
That scared me.
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
Go's so much more complicated than chess, and for a computer to be able to deal with that level of intelligence was kind of like, great.
Chess is solvable. Go is not solvable. Right. Chess, there's a large but a finite number of moves. Mm-hmm. Go, I suppose there's still a fine. Well, it's a pretty big number.
It's a thin line.
It's a thin line. So fast forward to this week, and you remember that when with AlphaGo, it took them a few months to train it. Mm-hmm. They gave it a lot of master games. They interacted with it. They thought, what if we just, what if we just took a one of these new artificial intelligence devices?
Here's your rules.
Yeah,
we'll be back.
Yes. And it just played itself a million games a second, kind of like Whopper, or what was the in the
Whopper,
right? Yeah. In the War Games, right?
Yes,
Whopper does the simulation and comes up with the answer. There's no winner in nuclear or thermonuclear war.
The only way to win is not to play.
Not to play. So they did the same thing, only instead of like taking a while, boom, 4 hours,
and it beat the previous champion computer,
AlphaGo. It beat AlphaGo. So then they said, well, you got a little extra time. They taught it chess. It taught itself chess in 4 hours, beat the Stockfish, which is the number one current world champion computer chess program. And then, now Stockfish probably wouldn't beat the world champion, but it would beat everybody right up to that point. It's very, very good.
Yeah. And this is all about
4 hours.
DeepMind self-training has been so vastly improved.
See, that's what I think is a watershed, is that instead of training it on a set of rules or giving it a lot of examples, it just says, here's the goal.
Right.
You figure it out.
Well, and they gave it the tools to be able to do that because...
Well, you have to set it up.
Yes. And in creating the environment where the AI can actually figure this stuff out for itself.
The thing I find fascinating, a couple of things. First of all, you could look at the code the AI generated and not understand it, right? No human will know what that means, I think. Anyway, if you're an AI guy, call us. But my sense is that it's using its own rules. We've seen AIs talk to each other and develop their own language for communication.
Like certain twins.
I feel like this is a watershed moment where the machines now can teach themselves. And I don't know why. Maybe I'm anthropomorphizing here, but that worries me a little.
You're basically saying, like, okay,
they don't need
it's
us.
It's definite Google Skynet.
Yeah. They're a little late to the game. They should have done this 10 years ago, but they did it. Speaking of Google, this is a mess, and Amazon are in a shooting war. And, of course, when there's a shooting war between the giants, it's us that gets the peons that get shot.
So a few weeks ago, Movies Anywhere, which is great. If you haven't played around with Movies Anywhere, free application, your iTunes, your Google Play, Amazon, they cross-populate across all of your accounts.
I gotta get that.
It is fantastic. It's free. Obviously, they're going to track some information in how you watch stuff because they got to make their VIG somewhere. But all of a sudden, your movies, like I'm watching iTunes movies on a Roku, something I thought would never actually happen. It's fantastic. If you got
so Voodoo, it's a it Roku that app that you put on your Roku?
Well, there's a Roku app. There's an Apple TV app. There's
so,
a phone app.
Literally is anywhere.
It runs on all the things.
Nice.
Like, I think the movie theaters, you know, came down with a big stick and said, you know, we're going to cut all you off if you don't play nice with each other. And so that's like 2 or 3 weeks ago. And then, you know, a month ago, Amazon pulled Nest sales off of Amazon.com. Now, 2 years ago, they pulled the Chromecast sales off of Amazon.com because we felt it was an inferior experience for Amazon Prime consumption because your app's so delete expletive good, Amazon.
It's also...
Really, tell me about it again.
It's also a coinkydink, but Amazon developed competing products right about that same time.
Yeah.
Right? They developed a camera to compete with the Nest camera and then pulled the Nest camera. They developed the Amazon Kindle stick, the Fire TV stick, and pulled the Chromecast. So there might be a little coinkydink there.
There might be a little coinkydink. So Google has decided their coinkydink is to flat out say, we are yanking YouTube video off of
the Google Home.
The Echo Show.
Echo Home
and then
Show.
They're going to start pulling off the Fire devices on January 1st.
This bothers me because we do video. And for a while, if you had an Echo Show, not many do, you could say, Echo, play the screensavers on YouTube, and it would play on your Echo Show. At first it was full screen, then they pulled it. Now it's in a windowed screen.
Yeah.
What Google says is, well, that's not our YouTube app. Amazon made up a YouTube app. You have to. That's against our rules. So they're killing it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to do it on Fire TV.
Mm-hmm.
But you think it's anti-competitive.
I don't know if it's anti-competitive. That's something for lawyers and courts to figure out. I think it's stupid.
They're fighting.
But this is also at the same time, they're fighting.
The phrase is lack of reciprocity.
Yeah, that's a pretty good phrase.
Yeah.
But, I mean, so what's the reciprocity? Well, the Google Play Store will have to sell Amazon Fire TVs, and then we will restore Google devices to the Amazon.com.
If you're a merchant and you have a hardware store and you decide you don't want to sell Black & Decker products, you don't have to.
Sure.
And Amazon doesn't have to sell any product.
Sure.
Except that the bigger and bigger Amazon gets, the more and more it gets towards monopoly,
right.
It starts to become a problem if you can't get it in the Amazon store. It's also bad for us, the users, because we can't buy the things we want. In fact, if you search for a Google Home on Amazon, you'll get Echo Dot.
Yeah.
You'll get their competing product.
You'll get recommendations.
Yeah.
That oddly enough,
we don't happen to have products. That, but how would you like to buy our Echo Dot? So I understand it's legal. It's their right to
do it. You can't buy an Apple TV on Amazon either. If you search for Apple TV on Amazon, it's great. You get like a $12 plastic device. There it is.
Yeah,
the total mount Apple TV mounts.
You get a mount.
239 reviews.
How would you like a mount for the thing you can't buy here?
Yeah, we'd like to mount you.
They have a right.
Yeah, I said that.
It's a new business model.
I'm feeling that way about a whole lot of large corporations dealing with consumer technology right now.
Now, okay. Now, the Washington Post, which is owned by Jeff Bezos, who happens to be the richest man in the world and does own Amazon, did a story which I thought was probably they put it in there just to say, see, we are independent. But it was talking about this Amazon key that lets the Amazon delivery guy come into your house. And the writer, writing for the Washington Post, said, this was a bad idea.
Not because people didn't bring packages into the house, not because anything was stolen, but because it was like, this is such a wicked ripping pain in the ass, but what Amazon tries to do is lock your ass down into the Amazon environment.
Well, of course they do. The Echo ecosystem makes you buy stuff from Amazon. I'm not surprised at that. I do think there are some significant security concerns about this. We saw, for instance, a hack that allowed the guy to come in the house, disable the camera, leave.
Yeah.
Come back in, steal everything in your house, and then leave again.
I like to think that despite the fact that I have a mechanical diesel truck, I'm fairly sophisticated on a tech level. I will not put a wireless or remote access lock on my
neither.
Door because every time I see one of these, I get a call from a friend who I know from DEF CON or that does pen testing, and they're like, "Oh yeah, guess what? This is really cool." And a lock opens up that's
I will point out something.
Right,
a lock is like a serving suggestion. A lock doesn't stop anybody from getting in your house.
I'm not arguing that, but there's a
difference. You just knock the door down or punch a hole in the window.
Yeah.
It's just it's a little sign saying, I would prefer that you don't come in.
I agree. And when you talk about home break-ins, it's usually they walk in through the back.
Right.
They
smash
kick the back door in.
Yeah.
No, they literally, statistically, they're most likely to walk in through the back, kick the door, not break a window, kick a door in.
Easier.
And then they basically, everything they can stuff into a backpack, and then they walk back out and they close the door behind themselves.
Gone in 90 seconds.
That is vastly different from somebody
sometimes they stop to take a poop on your rug. Other than that,
needs
gone
a hobby,
in 90 seconds.
Because, why not make
I've heard
worse?
That's a thing. Am I wrong? Okay, I've heard that's a thing.
Another wild story from your youth. What? You've never broken into a house and pooped on the rug? No, well, neither have I. Good. But
there's something about Patrick, it just brings it out in me. And him too, apparently, right?
It's that kind of day.
Yeah.
But the thing is, though, there's a vast difference between having the ovaries to walk through the back and kick in the door and walk out with a backpack full of somebody else's stuff.
I like the general neutral.
Thank you.
Yes.
And being able to basically click a box
and just walk in
through the front door.
Yeah.
And when somebody goes, are you friends of the Laporte? They're like, oh, yeah, see,
yeah,
I got the thing.
I can
and
go
like,
in.
It just walks
right.
me in.
Yeah.
And then they walk out with a lot of stuff.
Here's another thing that's bothering me of late. Amazon, this Amazon key system only works if you use Amazon Logistics. And more they're doing this. I thought that would be a truck that says Amazon on it. It is not.
It's a dude.
It's some guy.
Or a lady.
The way Amazon's doing this now is kind of like Uber. You go online and it says, we need a driver to drop off 15 packages. And it's a person without a uniform and an unmarked car drives up to your house. And there are very few standards. And the more and more I get Amazon Logistics packages, the first one I got, the guy couldn't find my house. I ordered a paper towel holder. And it said could not be delivered because I think, again, he couldn't find the house. UPS can find the house. FedEx can find the house. But this guy is some guy. They've known this for years. But I don't like that. And I don't want someone. I see him drive up my driveway. It bothers me. I want a uniformed And you I want a uniformed employee of the federal government to deliver my stuff. That's what I want. No? Are you making signature signs behind me?
I'm making signs behind you.
Were you in Hawaii? Actually, there she is. That's not her, by the way. It's not her.
No, so in my case, the first time it was like a Toyota Corolla.
Yeah.
Pulls up.
Some guy.
The guy yells out the window.
It's not her.
You know, he yells out, like, my address. Is this blah, 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 blah?
Yeah.
Are you Norton?
Yeah.
Yeah. And a box comes flying out the window across the hood of my truck and into my hand.
Because he's paid by the package.
Yeah.
The faster he can. And we've heard lots of stories of late, and I think Amazon needs to look into this, of this kind of thing. And I really think that Amazon has gotten cheaped out on the delivery. That's obviously one of their big expenses.
Amazon is working to minimize the cost of delivery to maximize the effective returns to our customers who trust Amazon to bring them the best value in home delivery and shopping. It's not also like Amazon has the best prices on a lot of stuff anymore, too. Especially I've noticed a lot of cases with tools, automotive parts.
I know, I'm really thinking Amazon has gone has jumped the shark.
I don't know if they've jumped the shark.
They're getting close to jumping the shark.
You know, at this point,
are you shopping elsewhere sometimes?
I am shopping elsewhere.
You will shop around for price, right?
I will shop around also for availability on the devices I want to buy. For example, I can't buy
a uniform delivery person.
That doesn't bother me the way
it bothers you. I want a uniform delivery person.
You know, maybe
I do.
Postal delivery
it's just
for
me.
You, then.
Yes, a uniformed employee of the federal government.
So you will have
That's
everything shipped to yourself by USPS.
No.
Actually,
did you go to Hawaii this week?
No.
Everybody in the world was invited. Ryan Shrout went to Hawaii this week from the This Week in Computer Hardware. Paul Thurrott went to Hawaii. You know why? Because Snapdragon, the Qualcomm Snapdragon tech event was going on.
Nice.
And it's funny because Qualcomm announced its new chip, the 845. We'll see it in next year's flagship phones probably.
It's interesting. 30% better graphics performance. But the interesting thing is they're claiming 30% power consumption reduction over the 835, which is huge.
Huge.
Yeah,
I mean, I think Qualcomm's knocking it out of the park. I'm very impressed. But they got scooped by Microsoft, which also announced its first Windows on ARM laptops. Not from Microsoft, but
this
from
is
Lenovo
not the first Acer. Windows on ARM's
no,
laptop.
No, RT.
Remember
RT.
All those ones that everybody bought and then
RT.
Became useless a year later?
RT. But this is Windows 10. This is actually, it's Windows 10S. But it's a full Windows.
You can upgrade
HP,
to Windows 10.
Lenovo, and Asus. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the big thing. You just mentioned it, battery life. They say they quote all day battery life.
Right.
On the order of not, you know, like double what we've been getting. Mm-hmm. If you were getting 10, you might get 20 hours now.
I wait with bated breath.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see what these are like in real world consumption or real world environments. You can upgrade to a full version. Windows 10S is only going to be able to run apps from the Windows Store, which is great if all you need is apps from the Windows Store.
They will offer, as they had with the Surface laptop, a free upgrade to full Windows 10 Pro.
That's the big one.
Initially for the first 6 months.
And then they will basically run x86 applications in emulation on it. And that's where
weird.
I'm really curious to see how it does. Because there are a lot of great apps in the Windows Store, but there's still a ton of apps I use that are not run through the Windows Store.
Like Google Chrome.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you're right. Chrome will have to run an emulation, won't it?
Mm-hmm.
All the Windows Store stuff automatically runs on ARM. That's part of the deal.
Yeah, it's part of the Windows Universal app.
UWP.
That's a big W.
Yeah.
Big deal.
Deal. All right, well, we'll see. And that's another thing, by the way, you get for free because it's built into the chipset LTE.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really interesting. So many laptops have taken LTE out of the laptops. Now,
in many
will
cases,
all ship with LTE.
The LTE in the laptops did not work very well, or it was not the flavor you needed.
This is going to be that gigabit, that Snapdragon gigabit stuff. This will be very interesting to see.
Yeah, and it will be essentially as expensive as an entry and
$500 or $600. Yeah,
I thought it was more like $699.
Some are $700. It depends, of course, on configuration. But yeah, I think the Lenovo's will be $700.
The best of your smartphone
in a bigger smartphone
now in your PC.
Yeah.
I'm curious. I'm curious to get hands-on with one. I'm also curious to see what the performance is like.
You know what I'm curious? What the CEOs, the executives at Intel are thinking right about now.
Is it
time to get into Bitcoin, maybe? You know?
Maybe.
A new business,
perhaps. Actually, maybe all those Chinese companies are actually branches of Intel.
Look at this Bitcoin price. It got up to $20,000 this week. It's doubled since last month. And I have in my hands a $100,000 laptop.
Why, that just looks like an old Mac.
It does, but I'll tell you the truth. Inside here is my Bitcoin wallet, which I finally found. We all know people. You said you know somebody who has what?
A friend of mine, his friend lost a hard drive with something in the neighborhood of 1,000 bitcoins on it.
Like 1,000 times, bitcoins. Let's say 15, it's $15,000 now. So 1,000 times $15,000, $1.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
One and one half. Steve Gibson
right.
Can't find his 50 Bitcoin wallet. So I have a wallet. I knew I had a wallet. Russell, our IT guy, said, you know, your wallet has almost eight Bitcoin in it. And so I was able to recover my wallet. It does, in fact, have 7.85 Bitcoin in it.
To gray out any of those numbers?
This operation needs your wallet passphrase to unlock the wallet.
Dun, dun, dun.
This is my Bitcoin pay to me. If you want to pay me money that I'll never be able to access, go ahead, just pay that number. So now my job, right. I got the wallet back. By the way, just a little tip. All you need is that one tiny, like, kilobyte file. It's called the wallet.dat file.
And the password.
If you encrypted it. Many people didn't. I was smart. Well, I was half smart. I made the wallet, and then I encrypted it. So that even if they got my wallet.dat file, they couldn't get into it. But now I can't get into it. 7.85 Bitcoin. Which at today's value is almost $100,000.
So the $64,000 question is there someone out there who would like to help Mr. Laporte crack his password?
During the show, I'm going to type. And if you hear a sudden scream, I just got $100,000 richer.
I can buy Ludacris mode!
Anyway, I think that's an amazing number. What do you think? Up, down? You think if you had any Bitcoin, like if I got this, should I sell immediately?
In, you know, the immortal words of the greatest game ever played, I have forgiven all attempts at prophecy.
Yeah.
It's a mess. I have a friend of mine who is heavily involved. He has about $30,000 worth of hardware that is doing nothing but mining, but I think primarily Ethereum mining.
The only way it makes sense, though, is if you're getting power for very little money, right?
In his case, he's somewhere around 8 cents a kilowatt hour, which is so cheap compared to most
California
other people.
California is much more. Yeah.
In my case, where I am in Alameda, it's municipal power, and your initial X number of kilowatt hours are at 10 cents. Then
that's
it goes
the
to
tier
13
one.
Cents, and then it goes to 20-something cents.
Tier 4. And it gets there quickly.
Which is why I will probably never own an electric car unless I get solar power.
I have
power.
Solar panels, because for that very reason.
My friend who's paying like 8 cents a kilowatt hour, and there's no tiering, and there's no increased prices, he's spending like $700 a month.
Yeah. Is he making any Bitcoin?
I think he's making somewhere, not Bitcoin, but he's making
Ethereum?
Other things. Yeah, like $3,000 to $4,000 a month.
See, so it pays.
Yeah.
The problem with Bitcoin is it's so expensive to generate Bitcoin now that really the only people mining Bitcoin are people who live next to hydroelectric plants in China. And as a result, 1,000 people, almost all Chinese, own 40% of the market. And those whales are the thing that makes me think I should sell. Because who knows? Who knows what they're going to do? I guess they're not going to hurt themselves.
Yeah, but, you know, things get complicated for strange reasons.
I think it's the Chinese government because you have to be connected to the grid, get almost free power. It's got to be the Chinese government.
Yeah, but the problem is when you start looking at that stuff, you realize, there's like, you know, divisions of the Chinese army that run massive manufacturing facilities or don't control the power grid in their particular region.
Right.
Who knows?
Who knows?
We don't.
Who knows?
Don't take advice from either one of
us. It's moot unless I can unlock this $100,000 laptop.
Here, I'll hold that for you.
All right. We thought it would be a good time to talk about headphones because you're my headphone guru. I got Grados because of you 20 years ago.
It's a long time ago.
Still love them.
They're good stuff.
Still love them. But nowadays, with many phones, you don't have a headphone jack. You got to go Bluetooth. These are actually Apple's AirPods are actually from the technological point of view. They pair easily if you've got an iPhone.
They're actually the Wirecutter's pick as the best sort of wireless, truly wireless earbud, i.e. there's no cable between the earbuds.
But what do you think of the audio quality?
It's certainly audio quality.
It's the same. I'm told it's the same hardware as in the wired AirPods.
I am not an iPod. There's three things. In terms of the Apple stuff, there's three things going on for me. One, they don't stay in my ears. The old ones don't stay in my ears. The new ones don't stay in my ears.
You've always had notoriously small ear canals.
It's odd. Such large ears, such small ear canals.
But Lisa, my wife, is the same way. And so even though she has AirPods, she doesn't like them because they're not comfortable.
They're not, you know, they don't particularly hold in. These are, I mean, you know, if you're going,
And it's one size fits all. I mean, they don't give you multiple sizes.
Well, there's a statistical average that covers the majority of people, and the rest of you can also.
It's very Apple. If your ears don't fit, that's your problem.
Yeah, you have the wrong ears.
Yeah. You're hearing it wrong.
You know, they seem to be pairing well. People like the audio. And if you're.
The pairing is the key.
Yeah.
Now, I hear these are, and if anybody wants to buy these off of me, Patrick, these are the Pixel Buds.
Which are...
They're not technically wireless because they're connected by a wire, but they're, but then there's no other wire connecting them. They also have a very complicated wire management system. And like the AirPods, in fact, this is the standard, they have a battery case that will charge them. So you get a few hours in the AirBuds, but you put them back in here,
not
you
only,
can get another.
They're wonderful for translating
Buds.
Things. They
no,
sound
but yeah.
mediocre, and
yeah.
I understand you had them paired once.
Yeah,
your
I've
Google
never been
product.
Able to pair them again. And we didn't even, we tried a couple of weeks ago to do the translating, and it didn't work very well. So I think that, you could do the translating with your phone just as well, frankly. So I can't really recommend those. These are what I've settled on. These are from Jabra. Now, they're not cheap. These are the Jabra Elite Sport Wireless Earbuds. List price, $250, which is expensive. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, one of the reasons I bought them is they had a Black Friday deal of $150.
That's awesome.
And at that price, these are a must-buy. One of the things, the same idea, this case is a 10-hour...
I don't know if
they're
a must-buy.
Well, I'll tell you why. 10-hour case, charging case, mm-hmm. and then 5 hours just standalone, so you get about 15 hours total. What I really liked about these is they come with a set of different buds, three different sizes, small, medium, large. And the same thing with these little inserts that you put in the folds of your ear to keep them from falling out. And they do quite a good job. If you spend the energy to get them to fit. The sound, the bass is very good because they're really sealed in there.
If your earbuds don't fit properly, which is why, for example, like, you know, one more, they do like 14 different sets, like silicone and foam tips, where you can really
get it.
Who
makes these?
One more.
One. Oh, I thought you were saying, here, I have one more set.
But no. These are literally from a company called One More. I mean, these are wired. They're on sale for like, $60
at
Costco.
I use Edemotics, which I love.
Edemotics are great for the seal. They kind of fall off at the low end. They're good.
The low end's not as good.
But the low end's not as good. Yeah. Edemotics are great is if you want to block out all of the noise and you don't want active noise cancellation.
Like that. Right.
But if this does not fit properly, you will not
have
any bass.
Right.
So that's
good. So I was able to get really very good bass on these. And these are sport. And that's the key on these. Because they're in your ear and they're well seated in your ear, they can measure your heart rate and your VO2 max.
And they're fairly sweatproof, too.
They're waterproof, they claim, so you can sweat right through them. In fact, they say you can wear they can go down to, I think, 7 atmospheres.
Wow.
Which is like 100 feet. I mean, they can really...
You may not ever get them back out of your ear canal at that
You shouldn't wear them that deep. but the idea is you could swim in them, and you certainly can sweat in them.
Mm-hmm.
And they give you coaching. So they know your heart rate, and they're able to say, you need to work harder or you need to work less hard. If your target rate is this, this is how hard you have to work. I kind of like that. I am actually very impressed with these. The quality is great. The price is a little steep at $250, especially because these, like all solo earbuds, are going to be easy to lose. The AirPods, same thing. But if you can get them, and I would watch carefully to see if they do other sales between now and the holidays. Mm-hmm. If you can get them for $150, these are phenomenal.
Jabra's doing some nice work.
Yeah, sound quality is great. Oh, by the way, they work as a speakerphone, as a wireless Bluetooth headphone. Pairing is not too difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Not as good as the W1-based pairing on the AirPods. Nothing is. But this is my current favorite for wireless earbuds. These are the Jabra Elite Sport AirPods or EarPods. And again, only get these wireless earbuds if you can get them on sale. And I suspect there will be more sales if they got it down to $150.
$199
right now. That, at that price, I think that'd be worth it. So $249 list. Very good sound quality. If you take the time to fit them, actually make you do this. They first say, okay, get them as good as you can get. That sounds good. Okay, put them in your ear. Now don't move. And they say, can we get your heart rate? They can. They say, okay, now run around. And I was going like this. And they don't fall out. And then they see if they get your heart rate when you go like this. And you have to pass that. Yeah, you have to pass that test before you can use them. But once you do that,
that's smart because one of the things you run into is a lot of products get returned because people don't actually get
them. They don't take the time to
fit
them.
So refusing to sort of activate the product until it actually runs properly seems smart to me.
Yeah, it's a little annoying, but if you get it working, it works. And by the way, they of course come with an app a very nice app. The next thing I'm supposed to do is a VO2 max test. I think I could die. Maybe probably. You know what I'll do? I'll go into insane mode on my Tesla. That'll probably do it. I'm supposed to run for a minimum of 15 minutes at 70 to 100% of my maximum heart rate.
Uh-huh. Can you but, can you run for that long? Because I can't. It's 70% of my maximum heart rate.
Are you kidding me? So anyway, that but the, what that will do is that will then set it up for your training threshold. What
have you ever seen a real VO2 max heart rate where they do the ramp they put that goes up put in the face? And it's terrifying.
No, I'm not going to do that. Or just, you
it's
know,
like
worst
having a face hugger while you're being chased up a ramp.
Somebody's having a heart attack. Somebody's got a heart problem.
Right.
And what they do is run you till you collapse. How is that a good idea? Okay, I'm just asking. For a friend. Asking for a friend.
If you have heart difficulties, please don't do the VO Max test.
They don't say that. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to show you the first crowd-developed computer, the Eve V. But first, I want to show you this. This is great. You go somewhere. You go places where it's chilly, right?
Yes.
You like to snowboard, I know.
Snowshoe. And hike amongst the
elk.
Trees.
This is, you've heard of Eddie Bauer then. Everybody yes. who's an outdoors person knows about Eddie Bauer. They make the great stuff. Look at this. This is a down jacket. No puffs,
ooh.
No quilting. This is using a new down fabric.
If, I was going to say, if it's not quilted, how does the down stay in place?
It doesn't, well, that's exactly right. It does because it's fabric. So you don't get pilling or bunching.
Nice.
Get this. 15 below. This is good to 15 below. And look at the, show the infrared pictures, because the problem with quilting is it gives you leaks.
Yep.
See that? Where it's quilted, heat leaks out. Not with this. The Evertherm jacket actually has uniform heat protection. It's thin and it's lightweight. Let me tell you how lightweight. It is 11.36 ounces for the
men. Delightfully lightweight.
That is less than that's less than a lid. What is that? That's less than a pound. 11.36 ounces. It's not much.
It's much less. It's a pound is 16 ounces.
A pound is 16. It goes down to 15 below. Water-resistant storm-repelled DWR technology. It's nice. Wind-resistant. They test this with their world-class guides on Mount Everest, on Mount Kilimanjaro, the Grand Tetons.
So people who actually can die.
Right. Yeah. And this is awesome. Eddie Bauer. Everybody knows Eddie Bauer. You can go to eddiebauer.com/evertherm or go to your Eddie Bauer store. When winter comes, I go to Eddie Bauer. Eddiebauer.com/evertherm. I should put this on you.
You should.
I don't think mine would fit you.
Do you have a 2XL?
Yeah. 2XL now?
It's been 2XL for about 20 years.
Programmer size, we call that. But you're a big guy, but not a fat guy.
I
you're
have
just
shoulders.
A big guy. You're,
I could lose weight, but
you're
even then.
Buff.
Buff.
That's from carrying a sledgehammer. That's his workout.
Everyone needs a hobby.
This is
the magical,
the
mystical
V computer. I wanted to show you the unboxing because I think they've actually – one of the things you'd expect with a low-cost crowdsourced – they did this first on Indiegogo, and now they have a site, eve.community, with 6,000 members all giving input.
You'd expect a cheap paper box.
Exactly. You wouldn't think – this is Apple – look at this. Apple quality packaging inside here. And when I first opened it, I thought, oh, there's the laptop. No, it's the keyboard. But look at that. Alcantara, like the Surface, very nice fabric. And if we dig a little...
Alcantara, the name of the fabric?
Alcantara.
Alcantara.
Yeah. Alcantara.
Got it.
It's a good name for a fabric. Inside here, of course, you've got the power supply, you know, all the cords
the stuff.
You need. You get the pen. We should show you the pen. This is the same kind of touch-sensitive... In fact, really, it compares directly with the Surface. Here, let's take this out of the box.
Well, this is basically a group of people that liked the idea of the Surface but didn't want to pay.
They wanted a convertible, and they didn't want to pay the Microsoft price. It does have a kickstand. And the kickstand, which I really like, goes all the way back to about 20 degrees. That means you could use this almost as a drawing board. It does use pogo pins to connect to the keyboard, just like the Surface Pro. But the keyboard also has its own internal battery, which means it can also do Bluetooth.
Nice.
So you could separate it if you wanted and use it as a Bluetooth keyboard. And one of the things, because it has its own battery, you see this? It's a backlit keyboard, and it has multiple colors, 7 different colors. All I have to do is do function, and there's the Eve key has its little triangle logo.
I wonder what that was all
and
about.
I can cycle through the colors. Another thing I really like about this, it has a fingerprint reader on the on-off switch. Mm-hmm. So here's the on-off switch. And while I turned it on, I unlocked it at the same time. Did you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Very quickly using Windows Hello. So that's the fingerprint reader there. The other thing I really like is, and you would expect this with a crowdsourced computer, they're going to give you connections. There's 2 USB-C connectors. There's 2 USB-A connectors. Both of them are 3.0. There's Thunderbolt 3 USB-C is one of the two. And it has a full headphone jack. I guess everybody does in laptops, but it's nice to still see these. And a micro SD card reader. I'm not sure what that would be for, but it's good to have it as backup, right?
You know, I was blinded with the new Dell XPS, the new Dell 7000 all-in-one. It actually has an SD card reader
so
on it.
So does my Yoga. Which I love. Why? What do you use it for?
Cameras and Raspberry Pi.
Oh, that's what you use it for. A micro SD card is for installing
the one board PC, because I'm delighted when those are
makes
on
sense,
machines.
Actually.
So it's heavier.
Okay, so one thing the crowd, and I think this is really interesting. You know, the problem with most computers, it's whoever works at the company, especially if it's Apple, deciding.
Right. Well, it's Johnny. Johnny's back to deciding.
Yeah, Johnny's
apparently.
Now back. But I keep seeing these thinner and thinner phones, and one of the things I keep saying to myself is I'd buy a thicker phone if it had better battery life. This is slightly thicker, okay, which means it's slightly heavier. But as a result, they were able to get a 48-watt-hour battery in it. That's a much bigger battery. And the processors are Core Y, so that's a very, energy-efficient processor. I think it's a beautiful display. This is using, in fact, they have a video I could show you here on the making of the V. This is an IGZO display, which is also good for power consumption. PCIe storage, lower power PCIe storage.
I should point out to the people watching at home that the video we're looking at is not blown out. It's just when it gets bright,
it's a little
it blows
bright
out
for
the camera.
Yeah, the video looks pretty good. But I have to say, this is even a luxury, because of the Alcantara on here, the backlit keyboard is a very luxurious feel to this. Yeah, a little bit heavier, but man, I don't mind it. A little extra poundage, a little extra thickage. For better battery life. And that's going to make a big difference. The keyboard has a battery, too, not to charge this, but as I said, for the Bluetooth mode. Gorilla Glass on the tablet screen.
Always a plus.
And Gorilla Glass trackpad. That's nice. I like the glass trackpads. And this is using the Windows trackpad. The DAC, I knew you'd be interested in this, is a TPA from Texas Instruments, TPA 6133. So it's a very nice digital audio converter. It also comes with two far-field noise-canceling mics. I'm seeing that more and more in laptops for Skype, that kind of thing, right? So you don't have to, a lot of times you use a laptop mic, you sound like you're in a giant stadium.
Right.
This will sound a lot better. I am pretty impressed by the specs on it, and having used it for a little bit, of course, it's got a pen that is very much like the Surface Pen, and just like the Surface Pen, there's
nowhere
to put
it. And everybody gets a pen, right?
Everybody gets a pen. It's not an extra cost. Okay. And actually, notice, by the way, I really like this feature. But Surface does this, too, where you can have the keyboard flat, or you can do it like this. There's a little magnet here to give it a little angle. That makes it very comfortable for typing.
So there's a fairly big bezel. Screen looks good, but there's a fairly big bezel.
It isn't an infinity display. You have that with your Dell, of course.
It's a little heavier and a little thicker, which isn't too problematic unless a half pound drives you insane. The thing where I was really curious, the keyboard, the tactile response to the feel of the keyboard
is
really good.
Good travel. A lot of times now we're seeing these very short travel keyboards, which are, I think, hard to be accurate with. But this feels very nice. Now, to be fair, the Microsoft Surface Pro keyboard is, if you get the high-end one, is about this good, the type keyboard. Now, here's the big thing for me. I mentioned already the fingerprint reader built in. That's huge. Type-C charging. One of the things I hate about the Surface is you have to use their proprietary Surface connector for charging.
Really poor choice on their part.
Type-C is so important these days on laptops. I would say don't buy a Surface because it doesn't have Type-C. And Type-C charging means you don't have to buy a proprietary charger. You have chargers probably already.
If the charger you have is of a decent quality and will actually do the job without lighting itself on fire, that's a whole other conversation. But one of the things about the XPS I like is that it will use the proprietary charger or it will do USB-C charging.
Right.
You know, and as I started to get more USB-C devices.
Isn't that nice?
Or monitors with USB-C where I could plug the USB-C cable into the laptop and it would charge the laptop and pull the video off the laptop. Like USB-C.
Isn't that nice?
Yes. USB-C is a hot mess in a lot of ways, but when it works,
it's
great.
These days I say don't buy a laptop that doesn't have a fingerprint reader because that's the fastest, easy way to log in. I like the Windows Hello camera, but the fingerprint reader is much more secure. And that doesn't have Type-C charging. You've got to have Type-C charging and a fingerprint reader. This has that in a very nice form factor. This is a very high resolution. I think a very nice display. It is, is that 3.2? I don't think it's 3.2. I think it...
It's in the neighborhood.
The Surface is 3.2, which I really like. Maybe it is 3.2. Let me look at the resolution of this.
What's the pricing on this thing?
All right, so Depends what you, of course, depends what you put want. If you want the M3, the best mobility processor, with 8 gigs of RAM and 128 gig hard drive, the low end, there it is, $799, which I think is very competitive.
Well, it's actually in a lot of ways more than competitive because so many of the entry-level laptops we see at that price only have 4 gigabytes of RAM.
Yeah, you don't want.
Which is a nightmare when you're running Windows.
Go all the way up to 16 gigs of RAM and an i7 with a terabyte SSD, you're $2,000. This is about $900 less.
That's huge.
Than a comparable Surface Pro, the brand new Surface Pro, when you put an i7, 16 gigs of RAM, a 512 gig hard drive, and you include the pen, which is extra for Microsoft.
Right.
That is a huge difference. Here's what you don't get. You don't get the stability of a company like Microsoft. I don't know how long Eve's going to be around.
Right.
They're a crowdsourced company. It's eight guys in Finland.
There's nothing wrong with a product designed by eight guys. The $64,000 question is the eight guys. Not just is the eight guys, will they still be in business, but has this been assembled and will this hold up as well?
What they
because
say
even
is...
even with all of Microsoft's money, they had some issues for a while.
I know. It was the first... I often say don't buy the first laptop from any company. This is the first laptop from Eve. Scandinavian industrial design, these eight guys in Finland. Chinese manufacturer, everybody makes in China. But to their specs, there were also American designers. And really, we should say that the community is 1,000 people who designed this at eve.community and designed each spec one by one through the crowdsource. That's unique. I have to say, they have made a gorgeous... Mm-hmm. If you're looking for a convertible, I would absolutely say this is more than competitive with a Microsoft Surface Pro. The only question mark is, you know, support. How long are they going to be around? But if you think of this as a computer you're going to use for a couple of years, I'd have no problem with this. All-day battery life. I love it that this is... and Microsoft's doing this now, too, but the idea that this can go... an infinite number of degrees, including, I do this with my Surface Studio, this laid back, by the way, look how fast, let me just show you how fast this fingerprint reader is. As soon as it sees me, I didn't get it on right, but it's very quick. And I really like that. This is 2880 by 1920. 2880 by 1920.
It's a nice res.
It's a sharp display.
It's funny. I will be very curious to see how they hold up over time. Having compared to the description of some of the reviews I read, I'm more impressed with it face to face than I was in some of the write ups.
It's pretty nice. And I don't know why do they give you these? What are those?
To mount your watch band.
That's what it looks like. Well, they look like watch band pins. I don't know. They must have some importance that I don't understand.
Is there a manual?
Yeah, probably somewhere. So I'm going to say thumbs up on the Eve with that one exception. I don't, it's a company, first time they made a laptop. We don't know how long they're going to be around. Packaging is beautiful. They include, by the way, I should show this, the international power adapters for the Type-C USB. That's part of the deal because it's an international company. It really, really...
And the charger is really small.
Yeah. Oh, I should show that, shouldn't I? Yeah, and this is typical of USB-C now. These chargers, let me see what this the wattage is.
45 or 65?
That's a 45 watt. All right.
It's exciting.
I have to say I'm really pleased to see this. And it solves one of the big problems I have with the Surface Pro, which is that proprietary Surface connector. They've done a very nice job. All right, coming up, we're going to show you how to put the Google Play Store on your Fire tablet if you get one for the holidays.
Jason Howell's going to be doing that.
Jason will do it, and he's going to make everybody at Amazon really angry. But first a word from Rocket Mortgage. If you need to refinance your house to buy this fine Eve computer, I got a way to do it. Rocket Mortgage, if you're buying a new house, definitely go to Rocket Mortgage. Last time we bought a house about 4 years ago, Lisa and I went to the big bank. And we had the big bank experience, which is straight out of the 19th century. You know, you get a clipboard with all the loans on it. First of all, you have to go to the bank. That means you have to put on pants. You go to the bank. The guy's there, the clipboard. He's going, and he's literally, I'm not kidding you, he licked his fingers. Let's look at the loans we have available. And he was so proud of this. He pulls out his financial calculator. And he says, well, if you put this much down, and you put in this, let's see, what's the rate? Oh, we got... This will be your payment. And he actually shows you the calculator. And that was just the beginning. I felt like we'd gone back in time. Then, now go home, Leo. Go home, Leo and Lisa. And we'll need, and he unrolls a sheaf of paper. We'll need some documentation. You need bank statements and pay stubs and on and on and on. We're going to the attic. We're calling the bank. We're going on. It took us a while, like a week, to get all this stuff. We give it to them. Then they come back and they want more, and they want more, and they want more. A month later, we're still going back and forth. Oh, yeah. We went on vacation. We get Lisa's sister to fax them more. We almost lost the house. Fast forward to the 21st century. This was only 4 years ago. Fast forward to now, Rocket Mortgage. In fact, no question in my mind. Next time, we're going Rocket Mortgage. Look at this. 8 years running, including this year, number one in customer satisfaction. That's Quicken Loans. They made it even better because now they have an entirely online process at rocketmortgage.com/NSS. You don't even have to come up with paperwork because they have trusted partnerships with all the financial institutions. You answer a few simple questions that I guarantee you, you have in your head the answers. You could do this at an open house. You could do this on your phone. Answer those questions. They say, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Is this you, Leo and Lisa? Yeah. You let us look at your, give us permission to access your bank account? Yeah. They crunch the numbers, then based on your income, your assets, and credits, they're going to show you the loans you qualify for. You pick the down payment. You pick the term. You pick the rate. You get the loan. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. If you're buying a new home or you're refinancing, go to rocketmortgage.com/NSS. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans for their support. Don't forget, bookmark it. You might be going to an open house tomorrow. rocketmortgage.com/NSS. We are just getting started on this show. This is an amazing show. Coming up, we take a ride in the new 2018, completely redesigned, brand new, the best-selling electric car of all, the Nissan Leaf. We'll take a look at the new one in just a bit. But first, Jason Howell is going to make Amazon really mad. Watch.
Amazon's Fire tablet lineup is enticing for people who want to pick up an inexpensive tablet for media consumption. If you live in the Amazon ecosystem, there's a whole lot to love for not that much money. But some people will inevitably want more, namely access to Google's own services in the Google Play Store marketplace. With the latest update to Fire OS 5.6.0.0, Amazon attempted to patch the hole that would allow crafty tech enthusiasts like yourself to install Google's suite of apps, so you're forced to use Amazon's. Well, guess what? I have a solution, so let's take a look. First things first, we need to make a change to the security settings on the tablet. You'll go into security settings and you'll find an option called enable apps from unknown sources. And this is so that we can install the Play Services APK files once we have them, which is next. We'll go into the Silk browser to download four files. And I've actually linked to those files. If you go to twit.to/fireplayservices, these four links point to APK files that are actually hosted on a site called APK Mirror. That is, in fact, a trusted source for APK files made by the folks behind Android Police. Tap one of the links in the dock to head over to the APK Mirror site and then find the link on that page that says download APK. When you tap that, that file will then be saved into the downloads folder on your tablet. Now, you will want to install each of these files as you download them, starting at the top of the list. You just tap the downloaded file in your notification shade once you have it, and it will then prompt you to install. But here's where things get a little tricky. You'll notice right now that the install button at the bottom is totally grayed out. You can't tap it. Dang it, Amazon. But have no fear and collect yourself. All you have to do is simply turn off the display, then turn it back on. And if you have a security code, go ahead and enter that in. Now you'll see the same screen, but this time it shows the install button is no longer grayed out. It's all lit up and ready for you to click it. So do that with all four files in order. And once all files have been installed, you'll want to reboot your tablet just to kind of clean things up. And once it's all loaded back up again, you should be able to find and launch the Play Store icon in your main apps list. And from there, you know what to do. You just log into your Google account and you'll have the Google Play Store and services intermingling with your Amazon content. Nothing quite like having it all, right? I'm Jason Howell, and I do nerdy things like this all the time on All About Android and Tech News Weekly here on twit.tv.
We're out here in the parking lot because we want to drive a car. Joining me now, Sam Abulsamid. He is a senior researcher at Navigant Research.
Yep.
Writes for Forbes, among other things. You've got a podcast?
Yep. Wheel Bearings, where my friend Dan Roth and I talk about cars every week and automotive technology and kind of where all this stuff is going.
Sam is my car expert. Whenever I have a question about a car, I always ask Sam, now, you told me not to get the Tesla. You were wrong. You were wrong on that. But let's... He's looking at me.
I like my Tesla.
Hey,
but there are other choices.
If you're making the payments on it. If you like the car,
it's
more
expensive.
Power to you.
You're right. That's expensive.
Hey, I mean, that's what's important, though. You have to like what you're driving. If you like that car,
but my wife doesn't. She drives a gas Audi S5. Yeah. She drives a sports car. The lease runs out in a month. She's been looking for a replacement. Now, I think really the future is with all electric.
Yeah.
So zero emissions. As we see more and more chargers everywhere, range anxiety is going to be less of a problem. This is the newly redesigned Nissan Leaf for 2018. They got rid of the alien eyes. It actually looks like a more traditional
vehicle. They made it much more mainstream looking, so it looks more like the rest of the Nissan lineup. You know, so you have the V-Motion grille, which is kind of a signature design feature of the current generation of Nissans.
Really good looking car.
Yeah, it is.
Very sharp.
Say.
The charging port is here. There's two different charging ports. This is the traditional charging port. And you said this is a CHAdeMO charging port. It's a little smarter, right?
There's three types of DC fast charging. One is the Tesla superchargers that everybody knows about, but those only work with Teslas.
Right.
And then for all the other cars, there's what's known as CHAdeMO, and then there's also the combo chargers, which is actually an evolution of this one. This standard was developed by the Society of Automotive Engineers, and so there's an updated version of this that adds two more big pins on it for DC fast charging. But in Japan, they use this standard called CHAdeMO. And so right now, there's about 1,000 CHAdeMO DC fast charging stations in the U.S.
I like seeing both because it gives me more flexibility.
Yeah.
And if I have it in my home, would I have kind of a traditional RV plug, a NEMA 50, say, and then plug it into this?
Or do I have to get a special charging? Or you can buy the chargers with this type of connector on them.
Okay.
They run about $500 to $700 for the charger itself, mounts on the wall, and then depending on what wiring you have in your house, you may have to get an electrician in. So it could cost you up to between $1,500 and $2,000 total for the charger and installation.
And something to keep in mind when you buy an electric car.
You only have to do that once. So once you've done that for your first EV, you never have to do it
again.
That's
a good point. So the big question on any electric vehicle is, what is its range? How far is it going to go? And that's conditioned by how big the battery is, right?
Right. Primarily. So this car has 40 kilowatt hours.
It's funny because you expect a car to have an engine. This isn't exactly an engine. It's an electric car. There's no internal combustion engine. Is this the battery pack?
No, the battery pack is under the floor, much like in your Tesla. This is the power electronics, and then below that is the drive motor.
And it's front-wheel drive on this car?
Front-wheel drive, yeah. Okay. They increased the size of the battery from 30 kilowatt hours on the 2016 model to 40 kilowatt hours. They haven't got the official rating from EPA yet, but it'll be around 150 miles for this one.
That's really good.
And then next year, there will be an even larger version that will get you well over 200 miles.
So I think when you get to that range, it suddenly becomes something people will consider, especially if you live in a rural area like this. With an electric car, you have to consider, where's the charger going to be? How far do I need to go? What's my commute if you have a long commute? But 150 miles, that's a good step towards...
It is, yeah. Well, and the other thing to consider, too, is if you live outside of California, if you live in Arizona, for example, where it can get very hot in the summertime and you need to use your air conditioning, or if you live in Chicago...
That drains the battery faster inside the car.
Yeah, because all of that is running off the battery.
Yeah. How long can we expect these batteries to last?
Engineers have tried to be really careful not to overuse the batteries.
Right.
So what they do is they run them from about 10% to 90% of capacity. And you'll find this in your Tesla. There's an extended range mode. So there's the default mode.
Yeah.
It only uses maybe 90% of the battery range.
I found that out on Twitter because the first time I got the Tesla, I charged it all the way up to 250 miles. And everybody on Twitter said, no, you're going to ruin your batteries. You don't want to charge them all the way. So I typically don't charge it full.
Right.
But when I need it, I can charge
it full.
Exactly.
Yeah. Nice, and
both.
As long as you're not doing that all the time,
right,
you'll probably be fine.
10 years? Is that reasonable?
So they warranty these, especially here in California, they warranty them for 10 years, 150,000 miles
that's
on the battery.
Good. And what kind of maintenance on the electric motor? That's pretty straightforward.
The motor doesn't really require any maintenance at all.
I don't have to change the plugs.
There's no plugs or oil to change. No, there's no oil. There's oil in the gear box.
Yeah.
That's designed to run for the life of the car, so you don't need to drain
that.
These
are pretty much almost maintenance-free, except for the tires.
Yeah, you still have to change tires, yeah. light bulbs, wiper right. blades, right. you know, all the other things that you have with any other car that yeah. wear out. But no engine.
No spark plugs to change.
Nope.
I want to take a ride. Now, the rules from Nissan are you have to drive,
yep.
and we can't leave the parking lot. So we're not going to be able to, like, really step on it here. But
well,
I just want to get a sense.
A
and let's get in, because I want to see what it feels like inside. Sometimes electric cars, you feel like you're driving in a little martini olive.
Yeah.
This is a little more normal looking. We're going to put Jerry in the back seat here, and we've got GoPro in the front so you can get a sense of it. So first, before we get going, this is pretty comfortable. I like mm-hmm. it. It's got, how are you comfortable back there in the back seat, Jerry?
Yeah.
Not a lot of leg room, but it's certainly for a compact car. This is pretty typical, right?
Yeah, comparable to what you'd get with a Ford Focus or a Honda Civic.
That's
or
what it feels
Toyota
like.
Corolla.
Yeah,
yeah, it's,
yeah.
Just, it's in the same size class.
And price class two?
Yeah, one of the reasons why Nissan decided to go with just a 40 kilowatt hour battery to start with for this car, as opposed to the larger 60 kilowatt hour battery that Chevy's using in the Bolt, is to try to keep the price down. They're going for value. So the base price starts at just under $30,000, about $29,900. Fully loaded, it'll go up to about $37,000.
And this is pretty loaded. We got the yeah. sound system and all this stuff. And it's got the usual luxury features, power windows, right?
Mm-hmm.
Big screen with the yep. navigation. And of course,
and ProPilot Assist.
Ah, let's talk about that.
It will do lane centering. It's designed for hands-on, eyes-on operation, so you can't take your hands off
as
the wheel.
As it should be.
Right.
Yeah.
If you take your hands off the wheel for more than a few seconds, depending on what speed you're going,
right.
highway speeds, it'll be faster.
Essentially, cruise control that will mm-hmm. slow down, even
yep.
stop, and then pick up again.
Yep. So there's camera and radar that look for the vehicle ahead of you and look for the lane markers.
Keeps you inside the lane.
Keep you in the lane.
Warns you if you drift.
Yep. So let's turn it on.
Okay. Oh, this is what by the way, I love push-button start. A lot of cars have that now. But I love it. There's no gear system here. There's yeah. no emergency brake. There's just this big, what is that?
This is the shifter.
Okay.
So when you push it over and back towards you, that
yeah.
puts it in drive.
Okay.
And then if I push it over and forward, that puts it in reverse.
And that's really the only two gears, right?
Just, yep.
Back
then,
or forward.
And then
yeah.
push the big P button to put it back in park. And before we go, let's plug my phone in here. And you'll see that
this is the first Android car. It's got AutoPlay and
it's the first Nissan
Apple.
With Android Auto.
This is great. You've got your music, you've got Nav,
got some All About Android.
Good show.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's look at the console.
Okay,
so it looks like a physical speedometer. And then it's got a screen, which
right. So you got about a 6-inch digital display on the yep. left-hand side here, an analog speedometer on the other side, and then this you can toggle through some different displays. The default shows you how much power you're using or how much you're generating when you're
right.
braking, and gives you some coaching to get more efficient
nice.
Driving. Yeah.
One of the things that Tesla tends to do is eliminate a lot of these buttons, do it all in software. That can be a mixed bag. I think a lot of people like physical buttons because you know exactly where it is, you know exactly what to do. You don't have to hunt through menus.
From a driver distraction standpoint, that's actually really bad.
Yeah.
You know, having to go through software menus and a touchscreen
right.
Takes a lot of your attention away from the road.
Yeah, a lot of complaints about the Model 3 in that respect. They don't have any buttons.
Right.
Now, Nissan's talking about their regenerative braking and their what do they call it? One pedal driving.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
So they've got a new mode for the 2018 Leaf called e-pedal.
E-pedal.
And there's this button right here.
It's not on by default because it might initially be disconcerting.
It takes a little getting used to, because what it does is it gives you maximum regenerative braking. So the normal mode is to simulate what you get with a gas engine. So when you lift off the accelerator, you get some nice gentle deceleration like you would in a regular car.
And when you're doing regenerative braking, it can really be like you're stepping on the brake.
Yep.
When you take your foot off the gas pedal.
And you can get 30 or 40% more electric range because you get so
right.
much more energy going back into the battery every time you slow down.
So eventually you're going to want to turn off the simulation of internal combustion.
Yeah.
You're going to want to turn off creep and just drive the car natively as it is intended. And frankly, once you get used to it, it's a very natural way to drive. All right, well, let's go
right.
for a ride. So you put in drive just by
yep.
that.
And we'll put it in e-pedal mode as well.
Are you comfortable? You must
yeah.
be comfortable.
So right now, I'm not touching any of the pedals in the car.
It's not going
yeah.
anywhere.
It's
yeah.
it's just sitting still. And so I just put my foot on the accelerator.
Well, you can feel, even without accelerating rapidly,
yeah.
some good torque at the beginning there.
And when we get around the other side and we have a little bit of open space there, will accelerate a little bit harder.
So we happen to have available a racetrack around the Twitch studio, so it's very convenient for this kind of thing. Yeah. How's the handling in this?
So far, it's quite good. You know, the steering feels, you know, quite. It's got good feedback. It's not sloppy or anything.
Oh, it's got some. It's got some torque.
Yep.
I feel that. This feels pretty peppy.
Yeah.
I like how quiet electric cars are. You just don't hear the rattle of an engine. You don't hear the... Now, some people like how their exhaust sounds, but you don't have any of that rumble. It's just an electric motor, so there's a slight whine. You, of course, hear tire sounds. Those are the same.
Fortunately, though, in the future, you know, when we've got drones delivering all our packages to us, that'll more than make up for the loss of sound pollution we get from our engines.
How's the center of gravity? With the Tesla, of course, is very low because you have this big, heavy battery in the bottom. Is this similar?
Yeah, it's, you know, probably not quite as low because the power electronics that we saw earlier sits up fairly high.
Yep.
But that's that, compared to the weight of the battery, that's a fairly small amount of weight. So, yeah, most of the weight is down below us, you know, in the floor of the car.
It gives you good cornering. Mm-hmm. Gives you real stability.
Yeah.
This is a very nice car. Are you think an improvement on the earlier models of the Nissan Leaf?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, the original Leaf was actually a really nice car. It was a little more funky. They tried to make it a little more distinguished from the rest of the Nissan lineup to say, when you're driving this, you know, you're an early adopter. You're buying something different. You know, it's a zero emissions car. So this time they decided, okay, we're going to go for the mass market. So they tried to create a real value proposition with the pricing, you know, and get everything, get just the right balance of range and battery size and everything, so they could get a good price and, you know, lots of nice equipment in the car. And I think they did a really good job so far.
Sam, I really appreciate your getting the Nissan Leaf down here, the new 2018 Nissan Leaf. Great to take a ride in it. It's a pretty impressive vehicle. I really look forward to a day where we get internal combustion cars mostly off the roads and have these zero emissions cars. They're fun to drive. They're easy to drive. They're low maintenance, and they don't pollute. I think that's a great thing.
That's absolutely.
Thank you, Sam. Great to see you. All right, step on it.
No!
It really, I love the torque of electric vehicles.
They're
They're really amazing. Well, I mean, I know you drive gas vehicles, diesel vehicles.
Yeah,
too.
I drive vehicles till they fall apart.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing. We don't know how long these are going to survive, right?
You know, it's interesting to look at. For me, part of the big issue with an electric vehicle is the initial cost.
It's very high.
Which is very high.
Because you're buying the batteries.
Yeah. You know, it's a significant, you know, in many times, what, 15, 20, 30%, 30 probably. Yeah. You know,
I think it's $10,000 to $15,000 for typical battery packs.
Over the cost of the internal combustion engine version of the vehicle. So that's prohibitive. And then where I live, I don't think I could do it without going solar.
Range, well, that's one thing, expensive electricity. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we have solar panels at home. That's one of the reasons we do it. There's also range anxiety. And, you know, you grew up in an area where people drive a long way every day.
Yeah.
I know this. And if you lived in the cornfields of Nebraska, for instance, this probably wouldn't be a practical
vehicle. Most people don't live in the cornfields of
Nebraska. If you live in an urban area, well, if you're an apartment dweller, the same problem. Where are you going to charge? Most apartments don't have.
And that's, you know, so you're looking at the cost of the car, the cost of the electrical installation. You have to do the math on the electricity. You know, if you want to make a moral statement, absolutely. If you want the torque, absolutely. If you like the car, absolutely.
I love driving electric so much, I don't think I could go back to a gas vehicle. I just love that pickup and that torque.
Yeah, but you also, you have solar, you have a short commute, and you have discretionary income to make this possible. Yeah. Your 2 mile commute.
2 mile commute.
Which you should be doing on a bicycle from the heart. You're tracking with your earbuds. But you shouldn't be actually cycling in Northern California with earbuds because then you're roadkill.
Yeah. Those earbuds seal you completely off. So probably you're right. Although you can wear one. They allow you to wear one.
It's nice of them.
$29,990 for the new 2018 Leaf. It'll be available in the U.S. Next month in January. They're making them like crazy
now. I'll get solar, and then I'll start looking at used electric cars.
That'd be interesting, what the market for used will be, because, of course, the batteries, as you use them, get less and less capacity. Just like on a laptop, capacity goes down, they get less and less effective. I'm bullish on electric. And one of the things that's going to propel this forward is many countries are mandating all electric by 2020 in some cases. That's going to make a big change.
It will be very curious to see how long-distance driving is handled with electric vehicles 10 years from now.
Well, you have to have superchargers or charging stations everywhere. You
not
have gas stations.
Everybody's going to have a Tesla.
You got to have gas stations, but they're electric stations.
I want
the problem is it takes you an hour to charge up.
Yeah. I want... a battery pack to come out and a fresh battery pack to go in.
Yeah, Elon showed those for Teslas, but I don't notice that they got into production anymore.
I can dream.
I love
dream.
That idea. Yeah.
And then they have to be nationwide and accessible.
One of my favorite things we used to do in the old screensavers.
Yeah.
We take some calls. You want to take a call?
I love taking calls.
Time for a call for help! We kind of mushed the two shows together. Let's go to Shrewsbury, PA. Dan is on the line. Very patient, Dan. Thank you for your patience. Hi, Dan.
Oh, I will be patient forever. I was in the late 90s. I fell in love with a little show called The Screensavers. So, you know, when I had a lot more hair, too.
Dan.
You were two of my most favorite people ever.
Thank you so much.
You very thoughtfully gave us a green background, so we could put more hair on you.
Perfect. I'd love it.
We could do anything we want. Never call a TV show with a green background. I'm just saying. Why do you have a green room? Do you do green screen?
That's just my wife picked that for a little alcove in our basement.
I like it. It's actually very fresh and lively.
Soothing.
It is.
Soothing.
Brightens it up.
What can we do to help you, Dan?
Well, so now that my youngest is out, or is in preschool, I've been catching up on my music. So I'm about 10 years behind. I haven't really been able to dig on streaming yet. I like to curate my music. I like to be the one who picks the songs that come up.
Really are 10 years behind.
Yeah, I know. I want the metadata to be presented the way I want to see it.
Right.
I want the details about the album to be, is it a reissue? Is it vinyl? Is it a burn of vinyl? Is it, you know, whatever it may be that I want to see, I want to add that. And then right now I'm kind of up to about 325 gigs.
Wow. That's massive.
And I'm still burning. I'm still downloading. I just got a ton of vinyl from my in-laws that I'm transferring over.
How are you vinyl? How are you digitizing the vinyl?
Right now, just using a Behringer U Phono to convert it over.
That's
and
the
then using and then using Audacity to
great. So you just
cut it and burn it up.
You drop the needle. You turn on the recorder on your PC, and you just record it right in there. And I presume you're recording it in a lossless format like FLAC.
I did a big experiment with vinyl over the last month, and I realized I love digital. Vinyl could bite
a lot of work.
I don't want reissues. I don't want something that was made for CD. I want old records. I want that because it was produced.
And I have to say, if you're, for instance, Miles Davis, Kind of Blue. Mm-hmm. Recorded in the 50s, very nicely recorded, but nevertheless recorded on reel-to-reel tape. There was only a certain amount of data they could put on that tape. Almost all that data has got into the vinyl. You're not going to get anything better with a digital version
of that. I don't buy into the whole, like, the mythos of analog transmission
from the needle
on the vinyl.
Because it isn't that way.
And they get scratched. They fall right. But I run into people who I have been sniffed at. At an audio gathering.
Because you're a digital guy.
Because of the...
can't deal with...
And I get that, right? It's your thing. And for people who have like 1,000 albums, and half of them are classical albums that they'll never get again, and they have this investment, you know, it's fun to drop a needle on a record. But here's the thing. When you start searching around online, like Steve Hoffman forums is fascinating. If you were looking for the original
Hoffman's
masters,
great.
Yeah, the forums are kind of crazy when you start digging in there, because I was looking for... I wanted to hear one of the original mono versions of the Beach Boys. And so I started searching around there, and it turns out there's been a whole bunch of reissues, and some were mastered by 4-year-olds with crayons, and some were as close to the original mastering as they can get. And one of the big problems with a lot of CDs, for example, Rage Against the Machine's first album, the 20th anniversary reissue, was about keeping it played on the radio. So they maxed out, they basically maxed it out. They compressed it.
It's the worst thing that's happened to music.
They took all the dynamics out of the music, and it sounds like crap. And then they took that crappy remastering of the album, and then they made that the vinyl album for the 20th anniversary issue.
Exactly.
You can see the grooves. You can see the compression in the grooves. It's a straight line.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, all right, Dan. So
I
brought somebody from 10 years ago here so that you can talk the same language.
Yeah. Oh, good.
All I'm using is this 32-gig iPod Touch that's stuck on iOS 6, and I've been on iTunes 12.2 point whatever forever because it was overwriting all my data.
Yeah.
And I just said, that's enough.
Yeah.
So now that, you know, like I said, making this a project, working on this over the last year just to get the CDs burned, working on getting the vinyl, just starting that out. So I'm trying to figure out, other than getting a headphone amp, which I learned from Patrick a few weeks ago, and I need to find a great amp or a great app that allows me to manage the music the way I want to manage it. But I go from home to the car to the office at work, and I come home, I listen to music a couple hours a day, night at home before bed. So I'm listening anywhere from like 4 to 10 hours of a day to music and podcasts.
That's awesome.
So I'm looking, I'm looking for a device that just I can load up with as much as possible. And a lot of it, all of it's MP3 right now. So I'm looking for something, maybe figure out a little bit more about what should I do about maybe reburning stuff in FLAC or downloading stuff in FLAC and all that.
Well, let's start with the 90% of your audio is two things. It's the speakers or the headphones or the earbuds or whatever converts the electrical voltage from your device into the, you know, the pounding air balls that hit air balls. What is an air ball?
basically the
airwaves, the stuff that hits your eardrums and you actually hear, right? You know, the speakers are a huge part of it. And your source files are a huge part of it. Once you get up to about 300 kilobits per second, it's a law of diminishing returns. I'm an audio geek. You are definitely sounding like an audio geek. So I would go straight to FLAC encoding for everything. And then when you transfer it over, if you use an Apple device, you can just convert that to ALAC. It's the same bits. They are all going to be there. You're going to have everything that was on the original CD. So my first thought would be like start ripping your stuff to FLAC. And then once you have a big old hard drive full of FLAC stuff, if you want to render it smaller, you can do that and still have the original sort of high I don't want to say high resolution because it's a whole other bag of weasels when you're talking about audio right now. But do you know, rip everything to FLAC, find some headphones you really, really like, and then find, you know, a device. You know, a lot of the iPhones are actually pretty good in terms of audio quality, much better than people give them credit for. Because a lot of the people who are talking about audio hardware on forums, there's a lot of bias confirmation there.
And it sure is.
Where it's just like...
So there are two parts to this. So there's a digital audio converter, the DAC.
Yeah.
And there's the headphone amp. And you talked about that.
No, the headphone... I would say the headphones are more important than the headphone amp. Because...
Okay, so three parts.
Yeah.
DAC, headphone amp, and headphones.
Well,
if the whole chain is good...
The source file and the headphones are the most important.
Oh, there's then, four.
No. Slow
there's
down.
There's the source file, the digital to audio converter, the headphone amp,
and the comfy
there's
chair.
There's five components. Your ears.
Yeah.
The head. Anyway, I brought I brought my works with me.
Ooh.
Yeah. This is what I'm going to recommend. You've heard of FIO? F-I-I-O? Have you heard of them?
Yeah.
They make digital audio players. This is actually the FIO X1, which has been outmoded. Looks just like an iPod.
I have one of those in my bag.
Sure. Yeah, you have one too.
Yeah, there's two companies. There's FIO, Astell and Curran. Astell and Curran, I think their entry level product starts at around four. I think they're selling for $300 on their website.
This is $200, so that's a little
cheaper. Their X1's now selling for $100. Yeah. There's the new X1.
The X5 maybe a little bit closer to what he's used to. Has a bigger screen, a bigger user interface. The real key on this is you can get you could take micro SD cards and put them in here. Which means, what is the biggest now, 256?
200 commonly.
200.
128.
So you can't get your whole collection, but I think in a year or two, literally, you'll be able to get your whole collection on one of these little devices.
If the controller supports it. And there are a lot of the devices. I've got an Astell and Curran AK100, which was their first portable audio player. That had two SD card slots.
So there you go. That would be able to get the whole.
Yeah.
And these have very good digital to analog converters,
yes.
DACs. They have very good headphone jacks. FIO's known, or headphone amps, they're known for that. I can't speak to your headphones or your ears.
Yeah. Well, if you covet the $3,000 Astell and Curran hardware and
that's
you're looking
crazy
at the entry-level Astell and Curran stuff at $300 and it's still too much, the FIO stuff's really good.
And this plays FLAC and it'll play
192
kilobit, 24-bit.
All the high-res stuff that you don't need?
Yeah, you don't need it, but it'll play it. Well, if you're going to burn it in FLAC, you might as well burn it 24-bit, right?
Away from that giant
not kind
rat
of blue.
Hole.
There's no point because you're getting – there's more –
What? You're not listening to it on vinyl? Phil.
You should listen to it on vinyl. This is not vinyl.
How dare you.
But I do like the FIOs a lot, and I'm glad to hear you do too.
No,
and
I love their stuff.
What would you recommend for headphones for this?
I'll be honest. What headphones do you have now, and do you like them?
No, I'm pretty good. I have the Sennheiser HD 598 SEs.
Awesome.
So they're good. I like them.
So he said that.
I don't want something that's totally canceling out sound, you know, and I don't want to drive my wife totally crazy when I'm listening to
midnight
while she's sleeping. So I'm pretty happy with those right now.
Cool. I agree with you, Patrick, that the iPhone is pretty good. They have good DACs, good headphone amps.
If you wanted to take a step up, you wanted a standalone music player that wasn't your phone, the Fios are great. Yeah. I mean, you can go a lot more expensive.
Well, I mean,
but
like
FIIO.
Astell and Kern kind of like has reinvented the MP3, and they're basically related to iRiver. Like iRiver does the manufacturing. Fio is doing much, much more affordable stuff, and it kind of gets crazy. And then there's Onkyo and about 30 people you've never heard of that are making these. And I would stick to Fio or Astell and Kern and maybe Onkyo because they seem to be large enough companies that they're actually supporting their projects and giving firmware updates. You got a good set of headphones. Like, you know, the Fio X1, the new one seems to be
this
rated
is the X5,
lower than the older
which has
one.
A big screen.
Yeah.
Now, it's $400
nice.
Bucks. But if you want that big UI, the UI on the X1 is primitive.
Yes.
I mean, it's okay.
That's one of the complaints about and the thing is a lot of the companies making these dedicated audio players, they kind of like do the minimum to make everything run on the stuff under $300. And the stuff that's more expensive than that is often Android-based. And that also allows them to do Tidal and Spotify streaming and stuff.
Which is great.
You could also, you know, I mean, it was funny because it was interesting for me because I've been playing around with this LG G4, and
that's actually LG's quite good in terms of audio.
But this is one of the first times I've had a phone where I'm like, I really want to plug. I have an AudioQuest Dragonfly. It's a $100 DAC headphone app. It is a fantastic piece of hardware for the money. You know, the engineer that put it together, Gordon Rankin, is a really talented engineer. He does $2,000-$3,000 stuff that he sells at his own company. You know, but it's amazing just running the Play app, the Google Play Music app, will run FLAC files. You can get FUBAR 2000, which for me is
one
of my favorite.
I'm so glad to hear you say that. FUBAR 2000 is amazing. This is a Windows. Now, are you on Windows or Mac? We should ask.
No, I'm on Windows.
Okay.
Well, this FUBAR, FUBAR runs on Android. It runs on Windows.
Yeah.
The screen is so trash. But it's, you know, if you want to start playing around with stuff, I love FUBAR because it's really simple. It's really easy to use. It runs well on everything. And you can start
digging. You can theme it if you hate the way it looks.
Yeah. And you can also dig into it and start playing around with a lot of what's going on with the listings. If you want to get a super nerdly, because I think you mentioned having Android, Neutron is kind of insane. This is an application that people either love this or hate it. But it has a metric ton of stuff to play around with inside the application in terms of settings and DSPs and stuff. I would ignore most of the DSP and equalization stuff. But if you want to start playing around, it's just basically a bunch of if you think about a nerd getting feral with an audio player and out of control, one end of it is FUBAR where it's like super stripped down, and the other end of it is
FUBAR
Neutron.
Is very lightweight. Yeah. FUBAR takes little
RAM. It runs
RAM.
Well on everything.
Yeah.
It plays well on everything.
What about so for management on the desktop, because he said he really cares about the extra file information in the organization. What do you use for management on a Windows machine? I always recommend MediaMonkey. I don't know how you feel about that.
I basically rip the stuff the way I want it, and then I never think about it again.
So you don't pull in album art or...
I do, but pull up FLAC.org really quickly.
Right. Yeah, I get so anal retentive about every step of it. So the album art, I want the album art to
match. I would look at MediaMonkey because it does facilitate that. It has mass renaming. We're going to let Patrick pull up FLAC.org there. And
it's dead, Jim.
It's dead. Wrapped in plastic.
Oh no.
Is it really FLAC.org?
No, ZIF.org/FLAC.
Ah. XIPH.org/FLAC. There it is.
I love that moment.
So FLAC is a codec, but they also make management software?
Well, yeah, but it's a great place to go to if you want to start finding...
Oh, they have listings of other choices.
They have listing of other choices.
See, I have the Pono player. That was the Neil Young high-quality Toblerone player.
The Toblerone player?
Yeah.
Which was a nice player, but one of the things that came out, it was when Neil was trying to convince... I mean, he was like, you're going to be able to get your classic albums, the ones you love, the way they were, on the studio.
I love Neil, but, and I love his music.
But a lot of the artists that signed on and endorsed it, they had no control over their catalogs.
Neil took them for a ride in his Cadillac.
Yeah.
He played an A-B comparison, said, now what do you think? And they all said, this is the best sound I've ever heard.
Yeah, and the other thing is the story I've heard from a number of people is that he did a 128K compressed MP3 versus a lossless file to demonstrate the before and after of the music. So it was a rigged comparison.
We can go. Don't get us started on this because we can go on and on and on about this. I think you should be ripping in FLAC.
Yes.
I think you probably should rip at 24-bit. 44.1's okay. No, I
don't
would.
Don't bother. There's no. Don't upscale the source to a higher bit.
Okay, don't. You're right.
Just keep it in.
44.1.
If you want to play with high-res files, buy high-res files.
Okay.
And make sure they're actual high-res audio files.
I do buy the high-res files, but again, you're wasting your money for something like Kind of Blue. But if you're buying something that was digitally mastered, then maybe you'll get the value.
You may or may not be wasting your money. Here's the thing. Every test I've seen where it is a full-on blind A-B test, there's... And suddenly, Cortana heard me and started talking at the other end of the room. That was kind of terrifying.
She's just ready to install the next reviewer on that Eve laptop.
I like that thought. Yeah.
This is, by the way, I hate this. Microsoft Windows now with Windows 10, Cortana helps you install it. I don't want to be talked through the install. Go away.
It's so soothing with the creepy voice.
Okay. What were you saying? I'm sorry.
I can answer your questions. I'm Cortana. Let me answer your questions.
I'll kill you.
I mean, the high-res stuff, do not scale up your 16-bit
files. So 44.116 is fine.
Yeah. There's a reason they chose that. It's really, really good. If you want to spend money for high-res audio files, buy them online from a source that actually has high-res audio files. Yes. And make sure their source for the high-res audio files is actually high-res.
And when he's ripping his vinyl...
Right.
44.116 is plenty.
Yes.
But he should do FLAC, right? I mean, at least do FLAC. I would compress it.
I believe in, yeah. I think, you know, if I'll be honest with you, Spotify at 300K versus FLAC, I'm going to have
that's
a lot of
close.
Trouble.
Yeah,
you know, blind
close.
A-B testing.
Well, and I'm an old man. I don't. Yeah. It all sounds the same to me. You could listen, you could play it through little teeny speakers. There. That sounds good. That's how I remember John Philip Sousa.
There, so.
But that's the thing, though, right? You got headphones you like. Rip your stuff into FLAC. Listen to that for a few months. You know, look at the FiO player. Look at some of the entry-level stuff from Astill and Kern. Or just run it off of your phone. If your phone sounds like crap, and I will say there's a bunch of Android phones that they kind of like, were like, you know, you can hear people speaking, mostly, in the headphone jack.
Right.
If you have that kind of phone, you can think about buying an external headphone amp / DAC. AudioQuest Dragonfly is fantastic. Shits Full of Two, which sells for $97.
What's it called?
Shits Full of Two.
S-C-H-I-I-T.
Do we have to bleep that?
No.
Okay.
It's from the German. If you
Padre
are Zim making it up.
I mean, nobody has to believe it if Padre said it.
Yeah. If Padre can say
the priest says it, it's okay.
Yeah.
S-C-H-I-I-T.
Yeah, that's not as portable as AudioQuest Dragonfly, but it's got a volume knob, which I love, especially if you're listening at low levels.
Is that
at
a headphone
night.
Amp?
That's a DAC and a headphone amp, and it's got a really, really nice DAC inside of that.
Well, we've given you a lot of information.
Probably entirely too much.
I'll watch it all back and take notes.
But see, this is what happens when you get to enthusiasts and they start talking about something right. They care about. You really, it's really, I think it's fun, frankly.
Well, it's fun. As soon as I saw Patrick was on this week, I jumped all over. So I appreciate
nice
it.
Nice job, Dan. Anything else we can help you with?
No, I think that's great. Like I said, I just want to say thank you to you guys again for all the years you've put in to give us that information, to you, to Patrick, to Megan, Sarah, Morgan, Jazz, Cat, Kate, you know, Martin, Kevin, and Yoshi, especially all those guys at the end. Yeah, I appreciate all that you did and all you've been doing over these years to make us know more about stuff that's really complicated at times.
I'm so
oh, then my job here is done.
You know that May, in just a few months, will be the 20th anniversary of the launch of, it was ZDTV at the time, but the launch of Tech TV.
May, that's when I moved to California.
1998.
Yeah. March. I moved in March.
Yeah. We should do something for that. I'd love to. You know, if we could get all those names you just mentioned all in a room together, then I'd be done.
Probably would.
It'd be great to watch.
I'd kick it on May 12th. But May 11th, 2018, that's the day to watch for. Dan, really nice to talk to you. Thanks so much for your
comments. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Next week, Megan's back. You can ask her questions, too. All you have to do is, well, do this.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
And I should, of course, have mentioned, and I'm sure Dan watches Tech Thing, TEKTHING.com.
Thank you.
With Schnubs and Patrick together talking about tech. It's very, you know, what's great is most of the Tech TV diaspora has continued on doing something like this.
Strange.
Talking about technology, and I think that's really
fantastic.
Or they've
ended up on major networks.
Or they're famous, like Erica Hill, who's doing great. Or Michaela Pereira, you know. But the rest of us, we got podcasts. Our show today... And now, if you're watching Tech Thing, you got to have good bandwidth, right? If you're watching the live stream, you got to have good bandwidth. Our show today brought to you by Eero, the company that has reinvented Wi-Fi. Is it two years ago, maybe three years ago now? Early 2016, Eero did the first consumer-based mesh Wi-Fi system and completely revolutionized it. First of all, they got me thinking about my router, you know, something you put in the closet and you don't think about for 10 years. I realized I wasn't getting the most. You get buffering. You ever see, you know, the Wi-Fi just stops working? You ever hear that scream across the house? Honey, the Wi-Fi's down. Then you need an Eero. Eero is amazing. And what I love about it is they're learning all the time from hundreds of thousands of users. So they get smarter, they get faster, they get more reliable. And when bad things happen to Wi-Fi, like that crack vulnerability, right? Mm-hmm. Eero patches right away. They patched within 24 hours of learning about crack.
It was impressive.
They pushed out the patch, and it wasn't you having to check. They did it. It just came out. And that's what I'm looking for. If you're buying an IoT device, if you're putting a device on online, or even more importantly, if you're putting all your other devices online through a device, you got to make sure it's made well, it's made secure, and the company stands behind it. The new second generation Eero and the Eero Beacon, I upgraded to that. I gave my mom the old system, and I got the new Eero Beacon. It's amazing! Each Eero covers about 1,500 square feet. So typical house, two or three Eeros, no more dead spots, no more buffering. They now have three, they're tri-band, 3.5 gigahertz radios. And they're twice as fast. That means you can do more simultaneously in every room of the house. They've got a Thread radio built in. And this is a future for home automation. That means they can connect low-power devices like locks and doorbells and other sensors more efficiently, more easily. You can easily expand your coverage, too. You got a dead spot, maybe the attic, or what I did with my mom. She has a studio out back, so I put an Eero out back, too. You can expand by buying more beacons. Well, as long as there's an outlet, you got Wi-Fi. Eero, it's a great gift to yourself and a great gift for the holidays. My mom was so thrilled when I set her up with the Eero. And what I love, I can go on my Eero app on my phone, and I can check my network. But I can check mom's network, too, so I can see how it's going. And if mom says, hey, I'm having trouble with my Wi-Fi, I just dial up her Eero.
Or if you're traveling for business.
Look at that. Everything looks good.
Mm-hmm.
37 connected devices. That's actually small. I think people are not home. And the other thing I love about the Eero is the really fantastic family profiles. I assign my devices to me, Lisa's devices to her, and our 14-year-old Michael. His devices, and if I want to pause his internet, I actually have a schedule at 10
Nine
p.m.
Nine devices?
Yeah. Well, he's got a few computers and tablets and so forth.
Impressive.
Plus, I've turned on the safe filters, which is really great. I can block adult content, illegal or criminal content, violent content. And all of us have safe search turned on, and all of us have malware filtering. And that's all part of Eero. Eero is great. Go to eero.com. If you want free overnight shipping, use the offer code NSS at checkout. Just select overnight shipping, enter NSS, and it'll be free. It's that most wonderful time of the year. It's Eero time, Eero.
It's good stuff.
.com. Mailbag coming up next, but first, holiday gift guide time. Yes, another installment in our, how many parts? Like 100 parts. 100-part holiday gift guide. This one's for kid tech. Here's Megan Moran.
If you're a parent, caregiver, aunt, uncle, neighbor, or anyone buying a gift for a kid this holiday season, listen up. Here are some ideas for gifts that will help you grow a geek. Let's start with the youngest of the youngsters, with the Parker Augmented Reality Bear for ages 3 to 6. I know what you're thinking, an AR teddy bear, that's ridiculous. But it's not. The teddy bear itself is just like the teddy bears you or I or kids growing up in the time of Theodore Roosevelt played with. But kids can play with it with the augmented reality optimized camera on your iPhone or iPad. Kids can give Parker a checkup and use the plush X-ray included to see the bear's insides. The play thermometer that comes with Parker also functions as a stylus to keep your toddler from wiping their peanut butter and jelly covered hands all over your brand new iPad Pro. Parker also helps teach empathy. When you care for Parker, the environment around becomes happier. It's a good way to teach kids how to use tech to care for others, which kids are going to need as soon as they start using Twitter or whatever equivalent cyberbullying tool someone has thought up by the time they get their own iPhones. Parker, the AR teddy bear, comes from Seedling, and it's available in the Apple Store, online or off. And hey, there are a lot of worse ways for kids to play doctor. Since Anki introduced its toy cars with smarts back in 2013, the company has been bringing joy to my kids and countless others with their products. Last year, they wowed our family with Cosmo, the little Pixar-like robot with an attitude. Cosmo learns your name and can play games with you, but you can also work on your coding skills to program Cosmo yourself. This year, Anki also released a new set of cars, these branded with the Fast and the Furious. The tracks, the cars, and the app have definitely improved since 2013, and my kids loved playing with them. These tracks are fun for any RC car enthusiasts, but even more so for fans of the movie. Unlike a lot of toys, the game is expandable, so the more you play, the more weapons you can earn. And like a toy train set, you can always add cars for future gifts or gift ideas for other members of your family who want to know what to get your kid.
Why's my car so slow?
For any Star Wars fans of any age on your list, you should consider Sphero's two new droids, R2-D2 or BB-9E, the newest droid from The Last Jedi movie. 2 years ago, Sphero released the BB-8 droid that you controlled with your iPhone and adapted as you played with it. The R2-D2 and BB-9 are similar with some new advancements. You can control either droid with the app on your phone, or you can let them patrol on their own. You can even watch the Star Wars movies with your drones for a very special viewing experience. The design of both droids is my favorite part of the toys, and to be honest, I would be happy to have them sitting quietly in the off position on my desk helping me work. There are many special touches, including the fact that they are scaled down to relative size to one another as the real droids are in the movies. Still, for $180 for R2 and $150 for BB-9, that's a lot to pay for a realistic desk ornament. So, if you're buying this for a kid, make sure it is a kid who loves app remote controlled toys with smarts inside to wander around by themselves for further entertainment. And if you're willing to spend an extra $80, you might want to also invest in the Force Band, an authentic looking wearable that lets you control the droids Jedi style with a turn of your wrist. Next is a gift idea for babies, or rather parents of babies, because let's be honest, babies don't know the difference between a present and a box. But parents will appreciate this present, especially those among us who are perfectly fine handing over our most beloved cell phones and tablets in hopes that they might quiet our babies. The first thing those babies will do is put those phones right into their baby mouths. So you might want to make sure that that phone or iPad is clean. For that, we have phone soap, a little gadget that uses UV light to clean your smartphone or your iPad. So you can clean it off before you hand it over to your baby and then clean it off after it comes out of her mouth. Just put the phone or the tablet into the phone soap case and then close it. The light will turn on while it's cleaning and turn off when it's done. How do you know it's clean, you might ask? Padre and Brian did extensive tests on this gadget when it first came out and found that it removed all kinds of grime. Phone soap also lets you charge your phone while it's cleaning. Phone Soap XL fits iPads and even many other kinds of kids' toys that you might want to disinfect. And finally, here's a gift for families with kids who have tons of digital photos but nothing to do with them. A digital photo frame makes a great gift, and my favorite is called Photo Spring. I set mine up to sync with my iPhone, and then all the photos I take are displayed in the living room instead of being consigned to my pocket. If you don't want all your photos to go directly to the frame, you can pick and choose which photos to display and then send them with your phone. You can also set up Photo Spring so friends and family can send photos to the frame, which makes it a great gift for grandparents. Photo Spring offers 16 gigabytes of storage plus 4 hours of battery life, which I rarely use since it's usually plugged into the living room and on display. That is it for my gift guide. If you have any suggestions, you can send them to Megan at twit.tv. I am always open to testing new products. I am Megan Maroney, and I host iOS Today every Tuesday morning and Tech News Weekly every Thursday afternoon here on Twit.
So we were watching Burke destroying stuff with a rubber mallet. And I really think you need to come and do an in-service and show them how to use a sledgehammer properly.
Training.
A little sledgehammer training, very much needed. It's been so nice to see you. Would you come up more often?
Sure.
It's really like the old days. It's so much fun to do this. Yeah, I really appreciate it. Patrick
Norton. The banter and the mayhem.
TechThing.com. And you're a regular every week with Ryan Shroud on This Week in Computer Hardware. We're happy to have you. A few years.
Somewhere in the neighborhood of 375 episodes.
Wow.
Maybe more.
That's like 7 years. That's amazing. And it's a great show.
You keep doing it every week. It adds up. The numbers get big.
It's amazing how that works.
We either just did 450 episodes or we're about to do 450 episodes.
Yeah. Wow.
So.
Yeah, I started that with Ryan and I just got bored. Because it's hardware. You're into really, really into hardware, right?
You just got bored.
I just got bored. But now it's interesting again because of ARM and what's going on and
all
that.
I think it's always been interesting.
I got tired of talking about GPUs and motherboards.
We talk about lots of it. We talk about phones. We talk about how the market's changing. We talk about Internet of Things.
Hardware has really changed. It's really become much more interesting. That happens. I think in tech, it's cyclical.
It goes up. It goes down.
You plateau for a while, and then all of a sudden things get interesting again.
And then something exciting you never thought about comes out at CES and changes everything.
Are you going to CES this year?
I always go to CES.
I never go to CES. Well, that's the difference between you and me.
I like CES.
I let you go.
You let me go.
I let you go.
Oh, thank you.
I just watch from afar to find out what you're doing. What's new? Hey, Patrick, what's new over there? Hey, it's time for the mailbag. Look at that. See? Just like the old days.
Right in the head. I don't remember getting hit with mailboxes on the old set.
Ooh. For some reason, this appears. I don't know what that is.
He have snot coming out of his lightsaber.
Is that a Marvel character?
Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
That's Luke Skywalker?
It is certainly an interpretation of Luke.
December 14th. That's soon, right?
So excited.
In fact, I got tickets to the Friday first showing in Petaluma.
That won't be crowded.
Well, you know what's nice in Petaluma now? And I bet you your theater, too. They now have reserved seating. You don't have to get in line anymore. That's changed a lot since last year.
Yeah.
So we know we already have the seats. All we have to do is show up at 6 p.m. and we'll be there.
Age we live in.
Hey, kids today. Here, pick one.
We had Dan earlier, and we were talking about audio. I realized there's something we should have mentioned.
Did we leave something out?
The ripping software. Two to look
at.
He
was using Audacity.
He was using Audacity to convert his albums to vinyl, but if you're ripping CDs, Exact Audio Copy is free, does a fantastic job. And that's, I think, exactaudiocopy.de. And my personal favorite, though, is DB Power Amp. If you want to do a lot of customization and tweaking of stuff, especially settings, DB Power Amp, you pay money for it, but it does a bunch of unbelievably cool stuff.
See, at its root, a CD ripper is merely copying the files off the CD.
Yeah, first you got to get the files off the CD, then you convert them into something you want. One of the things DB Power Amp does really well.
If you're doing FLAC, though, the conversion is pretty straightforward. It's only if you're recompressing, like with MP3.
But that'll do recompressing. Okay. That's what I used to build the Rip Monster when I had 7 CD drives ripping all of my CDs simultaneously. It will allow him to customize the metadata individually for each individual album,
nice.
Which is really, really
nice. And that was one of the things he really wanted.
Yeah.
I haven't ripped a CD in so long. I don't have any CDs left. They're gone.
Yeah, I still have them.
Yeah.
Because for a lot of the stuff I have, the reason I started playing around with vinyl again a few years ago and then immediately walked away from it was because there were albums that were never coming out on CD.
Right.
Because the company had collapsed or the band had disappeared.
That's sad. Because those will effectively be lost unless we can get those to digital, I think.
So I did.
You know, I take it back. I did rip one CD this year. When I got the Beatles 50th anniversary of Sgt. Pepper.
Oh, wow.
Which is a beautiful collection. And those came on CDs, so I ripped those. Those were very nice. I was happy.
You that could
new
do worse.
Their new remix done by George Martin's son. It's quite good. A good quality stereo remix. Let me start because I have email number one. Hi, Patrick and Leo. If I make a PC from scratch, I'll need to buy Windows.
Yes, you will.
For around about $100. But I see deals for low-end PCs for like $45. Is it okay to buy the cheap PC for Windows to install on my build? The same with a CPU. Sometimes it looks like cannibalizing. A bare-bones PC might save me money. What an interesting approach.
Well, okay, so one of the things that happens with Windows 10 is if you change the motherboard on a license of Windows, that is considered installing it on a new PC, and you invariably will have to dial a 1-800 number, and it's really bizarre. And then you tell it, you know, and it will ask you, is this installed on any other PCs? And if you're thinking, well, it's the same PC, it's just a different motherboard.
Say no.
Say no. Because if you say anything else, they're basically going to go like, well, you can't be
You can't do that.
And they hang up on you.
Do they, is it automated? I didn't know it was automated.
It's pretty automated in my experience. So here's the thing, right? The system builder's license for that license of Windows on that $45 PC, in theory, governs what you can do with that license.
Can't you? I mean, it used to be you would be able to buy, in fact, Newegg would even do this, OEM versions of Windows, and they'd make it legal by selling you, like, a chip.
That would be my first choice, right?
If you could do that, right?
It's everything's gotten really, really weird.
Has that changed?
Well, a couple things have changed. One is, my first thought is, do those $45 PCs actually have a legitimate copy of Windows? Are they coming from a reputable source? Because it would be really irritating to buy a crappy PC for $45 to rip the license off of it, then to find out it's a fake license. So that's my first thought. If it's a legit source, the license should be fine. My second thing is to look for an OEM deal from a vendor that you trust, because my understanding
of
Newegg was cracked down on. Yeah, Newegg's great. I love Newegg.
Yeah, but I think Microsoft doesn't like this. On the other hand, the good news. The good news is, effectively Windows is free if you buy it with a PC, and it will be upgraded forever. We don't know when they're going to stop doing this.
It will be upgraded until they stop upgrading.
Yeah, they say this is the last version of Windows, and we're just going to keep upgrading you for free. So you do have to buy it once.
Yes.
But that PC you'll never buy Windows again on that PC, and that's probably
until they decide you need to buy a new version and you want to buy it. But
I don't see that in the near future.
I don't either. It's going to be years before they do that. I brazenly assume Paul would be the person to ask that.
Yeah, I mean, it would be such a breach. It would be so. Not that they can't do that, but people would be very upset.
You know, as a consumer, I feel that my trust has been breached all the time by tech companies.
when don't they breach your trust?
But, I mean, in theory, right, the system builder license should prevent you from transferring that to another PC. But the reality is if you swap your motherboard, it's going to have a hissy fit. And people
then you
swap
call. And then you call.
So I would say, you know, if the $45 PC looks like it's from a reputable source, buy the $45 PC, swap it, and then make the call to reactivate it on the new installation.
Right, right.
So
that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff that's forbidden in the system builder's license that never actually seems to be enforced.
I'll be honest. I stopped building PCs. I don't see the advantage. You're not going to save money. You get to pick your own components. There is a certain thrill to it. But then the problem is if anything goes wrong, you got to call yourself because there's no one else you can call.
Yeah, but who am I going to call at 2 in the morning half the time anyway?
I hate calling tech support, but I just feel like if you buy it from an integrator like Dell, you call Dell. What I do now, I buy Lenovo laptops, ThinkPads, and I pay a little extra. It's not very expensive.
Right.
For three years of in-house, in-home turnaround. They come within 24 hours, they replace it or fix it, and it's free. To me, that's worth it.
Yeah, I mean, if it's fantastic for me with desktops, I've done stuff like
you're a crazy man though. Cooling things.
Well, it's not even so much the weird cooling things, but like I built an 1800X immediately before you could get an AMD Ryzen 1800X.
There's an advantage to that,
right?
You can get it sooner.
That reduced my rendering times by.
But that's not typical because how did you get the chip?
I bought it.
So you were able to buy the chip before you were able to buy a PC with the chip?
I pre-ordered it.
That's unusual.
It was funny. I pre-ordered it bundled with a motherboard.
Ah.
Amazon couldn't ship the motherboard, sent me the chip. So I had to buy a second motherboard to get a motherboard. And the second motherboard, also oddly enough ordered from Amazon, arrived before the motherboard I had bought bundled with the chip, which arrived like 8 weeks later.
And kids, this is why you want to build your own PC.
No, you know. My personal favorite, like the S4 mini case where I built the Micro ATX in this beautiful...
Sounds like you do this all the time.
I probably built 4 machines this year.
Why? For whom?
For
fun?
One because I wanted to do a micro ATX build.
You're showing it on Tech Thing, that's why.
Yeah, in some cases I'm showing it on Tech Thing. Some cases I'm doing it because like, I needed a machine to run PFSense on because we're doing a PFSense build. So I grabbed a bunch of parts together and cobbled them into a machine. You know, I also still think this stuff is fun.
You like to do it.
Yeah.
That's the real
reason. I'm not buying as many cameras every year as you are.
Well, but I mean, nowadays I just buy a laptop or if I'm going to buy a desktop, I buy
Hey, look, as far as laptops go, I got a Dell XPS 13, you know, just upgraded that to the new processor with four cores, and that'll hold me until it falls apart.
Very nice.
You know, it's good stuff.
You have a question there.
David says, I'm running Windows 10 off a 120 gigabyte SSD, but I decided I needed more storage, so I purchased an M.2 SSD drive with four times the capacity. I love it. I'd really prefer not to have to reinstall Windows 10. What is the best way to copy my current operating system from the old to the new drive?
Copy star dot star.
No?
Don't do that. No, that'll... there are a bunch of applications out there that will copy, do a bit-perfect copy, and manage migrating it to the new drive.
In fact, the company you bought that hard drive from almost certainly offers it on their website.
Yeah.
Western Digital, Seagate, Toshiba. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if these companies exist anymore.
They still exist.
IBM. You just go to the website, and they will have a perfect bit copying program specifically for this purpose.
I'll be honest with you, though. Almost every hardcore geek I know that actually has to deal with these kind of migrations.
What do they use?
They actually wipe it and build from new.
Yeah, I think that's always better.
Because there's nothing wrong with making a bit perfect copy, but the reality is you probably should have upgraded your operating system 6 months ago. Even with Windows 10, which is constantly upgrading and changing itself, I still find like at least once a year, I burn it to bare metal and I reinstall Windows 10.
I agree. Download the latest version of Windows 10 from Microsoft using the Windows Media Creation Tool and reinstall your apps. Nowadays, that's not as big a deal. When we first started talking about this, you'd had to find the CDs.
Right.
You know, I'll go to the closet, find the box. Nowadays, all you have to do is keep track of your serial number. Right. You download the latest version anyway. And I think that's probably the best way to go.
Yeah, at least once a year, wipe it to bare metal.
Copy your data. Again.
Before you wipe it to bare, before you burn it with fire, back up your data. Yeah. Double check to make sure there isn't any data you forgot. You know, back up all of your browser lists and everything. You know, and then make sure you've got the licensing for all of your applications. Assuming you actually still download and install applications, and then wipe it to bare metal.
That's where an external drive is great. You can copy your entire document and settings folder over. You've got everything. If you forgot, you made a backup in the process, and if you forget something, you just go back to the external drive and do it all over again. Patrick Norton.
Leo Laporte.
Such a thrill to have you. Thank you for joining
me. Man.
I forgot, did you want heat on the fire or not? Because I could, oops, that's the on-off switch. I could give you some heat if you want. In fact, what we should do a Yule log. Like the Nick Offerman Yule log, but do it with you with Patrick. We'll give him a little thing, and you could just sit there with a cup of coffee.
I'll sit there for 12 hours while you record over my shoulder.
Yeah, why don't we do that?
I love the Yule log. I miss the Yule log on analog television because my grandfather loved it, and I have happy memories.
See, it's getting warm now. Look at that. We do the screensavers. I'm not even going to call it the new screensavers. This was the screensavers. We do the screensavers every Saturday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. That's 2300 UTC. Twit.tv/live. You can watch it being made live. Usually the expletives get deleted before you download it. If you do want to download the expletive-free version.
I don't think there's been any expletives.
No, there haven't.
I've said delete expletives several times.
You're well-trained. See, you have a TV mind.
I cursed once in, like, what, 7 years, six years?
Well, you said that company, but that was real, so I guess it's okay, right?
SCHIIT.com.
We don't have to bloop that, right?
They're lovely people.
Download on-demand audio or video. And you should always get video at twit.tv/NSS. Let's see, what else? You can't ask for it on your Echo Show anymore, but you can... You can get the audio by asking, saying, Echo, listen to the new screensavers on TuneIn, and you'll get the audio anyway. What else? If you want to be here in studio, we have a last-minute studio guest. Ede stopped by with his dog, Rufus.
Rufus!
And you know what's great, Patrick? Uh-oh. We put Rufus asleep.
We're very soothing to dogs.
Hey, hi, Rufus. What?
Is the show over? Okay, bye-bye.
You can email tickets at twit.tv. If you want to get our newsletter, we send it out every week. What do we send them out? Monday? Every Monday, so you'll know what's going to come up for the week ahead. That's twit.tv/newsletter. We have a Twit store, and I should mention this around about this time of year. We don't make a lot of money on it. I think it's a buck or two an item. It's really for fans who want to wear a Twit hat or a Twit t-shirt or drink from a Twit mug. Go to twit.tv/store. My particular favorite, the snow cap. Don't you love the Security Now mug?
That's the one.
Steve's mug on the mug. This Week in Google, all the shows. That's a great holiday gift if you've got a geek in your life, including some of the classic Twit T-shirts that we've made years gone by.
Nice.
7 to 10 day shipping. That means you should get Heisey hither now if you want to get it in time for the holidays. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on the new Screensavers. Bye-bye!
Oh, Patrick roasting on an open fire.
Probably none of that.
Chestnuts nipping at your nose.